Good afternoon, and welcome to the school board discussion session. It is July 26th, 1 p.m., and this meeting is being audio taped. At this time, we're calling the meeting to order, and in fashion, we usually go around the table with some of our items. The first item under my matters was the presentation from the Hush Blackwell on the desegregation order, which was an attorney firm that was hired to compile and report information back to the board. Some of the information is attorney-client privilege, has not been presented to the board, and would probably be brought at a later date during a closed executive session. The reason for this not being presented today, I'll have our attorney elaborate and explain why to the public.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. As the board may recall, we've had a law firm.
We don't have mics, I just realized. So if you could just speak up a little. Thank you.
The law firm of Hush Blackwell is performing an analysis, or has performed an analysis of information with regard to the desegregation orders that were entered over time with regard to Indian River, and has now concluded that preliminary analysis and prepared a comprehensive legal analysis of that particular matter. That comprehensive report, I understand the superintendent has copies to be distributed to your offices for you to now take time to go through and review. As you may remember from other litigation matters that you've been involved in, when you receive written documentation with regard to legal analysis or legal strategy or litigation strategy, that type of documentation is not a public record. You, as the school board, can certainly review it at your leisure and digest the information. I believe the original thought was to have Mr. Borkowski to provide to the board non-litigation or non-legal strategy information. In Mr. Borkowski putting together his thoughts and how he would kind of go through everything, it became, I thought at least, a little confusing to talk about non-litigation information first without the benefit of understanding his full legal analysis. So we were thinking to basically redo our sequence of events, if you will. You'll still get the comprehensive report, as previously indicated from Mr. Borkowski, for board members to review and to digest. Take some time. There's quite a bit of information. The second step that we would like to propose, working with the superintendent and the chairman, is to schedule a litigation closed session with the board to talk about possible litigation strategy going forward. After that, after you have the benefit of the complete analysis, then it would make more sense to then schedule, you know, as needed and as you wish, a workshop or a discussion session, or to have discrete pieces of non-litigation or operational items to then be discussed by the board as far as moving forward with different operational items. So that is still going to cover all the information the board had requested. It's going to be sequenced a little differently, with the litigation information first and then moving forward into some of the operational issues at a later time. I hope that answers the question.
Sure, and I just wanted for record that this discussion that I had with the superintendent came as yesterday, so even though this is under my matters and there's some expectations from the public to have heard that under my matters, I apologize, but there was no way to get in touch with anybody that this item would be removed under our discussion, and it is a board discussion session, so if it caused any inconvenience, I do apologize. I would also say that I would just want to chime in and say that I would definitely support, as we should, a scheduled time for the executive session so that as quickly as possible because there is an anticipation of getting this information out. I would like to get whatever is digestible and non-attorney privilege information out to the public as soon as possible. So hopefully my board will support a close future date. Ms. Menes?
Yeah, and I understand what has happened here, but I do think that it's important to recognize that we've been talking about this for months, and months ago it could have been brought to the board's attention that, in fact, we were talking about attorney-client privilege, and that once again, sadly, we as the board come across as being not being transparent, because we only found out yesterday. And I think, to give the school district credit, I think some people were contacted maybe today. I don't know if it was last night, but some people, I think, were contacted so that they would have the heads up. But, you know, when we talk about this, the thing that worries me is that some of this material is not strategy or legal analysis. And there is no reason, after waiting for so long, I mean, we were supposed to have a report in April, you know, we have been waiting for a long time, the community has been waiting for a long time, and you would think, knowing that there is so much interest, that at least today we could have gotten some basic information of the non-litigation items. Personally, as one board member, I think that that is not a good image of the school board to the community. We are publicly apologizing, which I think is the right thing to do, but I just want us to reflect on how time and time again, as we try to build bridges, we seem to walk backwards in our inability to keep our word. Even with our multicultural African-American Student Achievement Plan, even having the players at the table as we said we would is not happening in the way that I at least interpreted it would happen. And yet again, that makes the school district look bad. So I think we need to be very cautious moving forward that we say and do what needs to be done. And I know that this is beyond our control. We all just found out yesterday. But everybody knew. All the staff knew, the legal firms knew, everybody knew that we were waiting for information. And we could have at least gotten some kind of a summary that would have given the community the confidence that we're moving in the right direction. So I understand you're pulling it, but I just think it needs to be done.
So with that, I would like to also then, is there anything else from the board? With that, do I have consensus that we move to the closest date possible for the board to arrange with Mr. Blackwell? Closed.
Can we look at our calendars and
well,
we're going to have to do something. Why don't we also?
I would say that it would be on the next board meeting date, and as long as Mr. Blackwell can attend. I know we're here the second.
Madam Chair, his name is Mr. Borkowski.
Borkowski,
excuse me. He's the lead attorney, and I can be in touch with him as soon as we're done today.
And could you check for either the 2nd or the 9th?
I don't think everybody's here the 2nd.
I'm not here the 2nd. I'm here the 9th. And you don't have to do it around my schedule, but I would really like the consideration to be here.
Well, as you mentioned, things happen, just like today, and if you are not available the 2nd, I have no problem in delaying it another week, because we're moving forward. There is no timeline on this. There is just, we want progress, not perfection, and things happen. I'm sure the community knows that if we want to include you, we will have to wait till the 9th.
Well, I am going to call in on the 2nd, and just for the public's understanding, we had no meeting scheduled on the 2nd for months. And I made plans.
Yes, and that
Friday,
is true.
I got
that
a
is
call
true.
Saying there's a meeting on the 2nd, so I will be able to call in for both of those meetings. But I think that this is very serious, and I really think it's important to be present. However, I'm one of five, and I would completely understand if the board felt that this is very urgent, and we need to do it on the 2nd or the 9th instead of the 9th. So I'm not trying
Why don't we, because we're involving now our contracted attorney, could you check his schedule and tell us what's the best?
You can absolutely shoot for the next scheduled, regularly scheduled board date of the 9th and try to work it in sometime that day.
And while we're considering this, we should leverage technology. If he can't make it here physically, if he can join us via video teleconferencing or Skype, whatever platform you want, let's expedite that. It'll save the district money, and I don't think anything will be lost in his presentation of this material.
Understood.
You know, along with Ms. Menes, I was a little disappointed, and I expressed that to you yesterday, that we didn't at least have an executive summary to share with the community, but I understand that it's not a matter of if, it's when. So we'll go through this. And we'll get to the win.
And in fairness, the superintendent said the man would come here and explain in person the reasoning. I didn't see any need for that, to come here to say that he doesn't have, you know, why he doesn't have information. That just was not purposeful. And, you know, we can convey that message via our attorney. We didn't need him to come. But he was willing to do that, to explain to the public. But I'm sure the public understands that. Any other questions from the board? All right. Ms. Moria.
Yes, I was wondering if you could explain to me the definition of litigation strategy, because when I thought we started this, this was really important to take a chance to figure out where we are, and we're going to walk in unison down to the district court and talk about how we come out. Can you just give me a definition?
I'll let the attorney do that, but my understanding is, even as the NAACP or other groups may have, as the other engaged party, and you have your attorneys and you have private privileged conversations with your attorneys, we have that same obligation, because we are under court order. And so this board doesn't have the ability to ignore that, and we certainly want to make sure in the district, not as a personal interest, but as a district, we follow what is suggested by our attorneys. Ms. DiAgresta, would you care to explain anything further to the member from the audience?
Litigation strategy is just that. It's strategy that a party may or may not take in a pending litigation matter.
All right, and moving, Mr. Brown.
I don't want to get one thing straight. You continuously go to the fact that other parties, as far as the DCA board, there's two parties, the Indian River County School District and the Indian River County branch of the NAACP. And I must admit, I'm somewhat appalled that at this moment, in the 12th hour, we are told we got to wait. Our children are being adversely affected by this. Our community is being adversely affected. It's not rocket science. If we were to go into this as partners, as was previously stated, all of a sudden we're talking litigation. And I have been accused of fighting in the media and all of this. I think this is very disingenuous. And I think that somehow we should have been afforded the opportunity to know sooner, and that we need to be at the table more consistently than what we're being. And I think it's insulting to us as an organization that we're trying to work on behalf of our community and our children, and this is how we're being treated.
I don't know of any other board member that was notified prior to yesterday. Did any of you? And when did the attorney notify you, Dr. Lindell?
So I spoke with the Ms. Workowski about a week ago about how this was coming about. He was under the impression originally that he was going to be delivering this report to the board in executive session.
Okay.
That's how this process works in all of the other cases.
In other cases, he's done that. So he realized that it was going to be public and told you that,
right.
He
advised not to. Right, and so at that point
he said
he would be willing to come and explain why he wouldn't share the entire report publicly, because it is attorney-client privilege. We are currently in litigation. We are under a court order, so we are currently in litigation. So he said, keep in mind, you hired me as an attorney to do legal research. These are legal documents. They're for your client's eyes only at this point. Your clients can determine what parts of the report or all of the report can go public later. But he said it would be better for him to meet with the board an executive session to go through the report and then share that information, you know, with you guys.
Well, it's unfortunate that he did not realize how he was presenting, and we couldn't have gotten that information sooner. But thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, and I think I appreciate the clarification, because it sounds to me like moving forward, we need to be mindful of communication, because it is obvious that there was a disconnect. The board has always expected that this information was going to be presented at a forum like this. So we were within that working definition of what we expected, and somehow between the board's expectations and what he heard, somebody did not clarify. So my expectation, I don't care at this moment who that somebody is, because that I can't change it, but I do hope that moving forward, communication is crystal clear, so there is no misunderstanding as to what the board's expectation is, because communication is crucial, and it is our downfall, as we see today, that there was a gap somewhere, and please don't let it happen again.
And I'm not speaking for the board, but personally, I'm disappointed. But you can't change the circumstances that was presented to me yesterday. It's under my matters. And so moving forward, we're going to, as Ms. Jimenez, try to get clarity from this as far as the presentation. I will try to take, but remember, there's not much we can do, so I will take a few, but we have a long agenda, but I will take a few questions regarding, there's nothing to present, so if you have some question about the presentation date in the future, yes, ma'am?
My name is Kathy Oskolsky, and I would like to make the observation that the board is in a unique situation of having this relationship with an attorney representing you in terms of litigation, but you also have a responsibility to the community. And in this case, the attorney works for the board, and the attorney has let down the community in a serious way. Many of us were significantly inconvenienced to be able to come here, and I appreciate the apology, but I'd like to see the board take some action with that attorney who has been hired by the board to act in better faith with the community. Certainly never to let this happen again, but I'd like to see the board take some action. I'd like you to tell us what you're going to do to the attorney for this abrupt discommunication that has now occurred on a matter that we all really care about.
Sure. Thank you. Ma'am?
My name is Fran Moss. I'm a graduate of 1971 Maryland High School. I was part of the initial students who volunteered to attend Maryland High School, and of course, a couple of years later, we had forced desegregation. What bothers me is I now have grown children and grandchildren, and we're still fighting the same issues with this school board that we fought when I was 15. And I'm going to tell you about that thing. I've been practicing law for 28 years. We operate on timelines. He's accountable to the board. He has a schedule. He or she, this firm, knows what they have to do. And if they're not delivering to you, you need to hire somebody else.
Understood. Mr. Hart.
That was the question I had with the attorney and this order being in place for the many years it has been in place. You all have an attorney yourself that have knowledge of this said order. Why is it that it's still being held up? Can you tell? What is his reason for still holding the order up?
No, the information was, and this is my understanding, and I just want to recap. The information is ready and available, was to be presented today to the board. It was the interpretation of this attorney, am I correct, Dr. Rendell, that when he was presenting to the board, he thought he was presenting to the board in an executive session.
Correct.
When he was advised that it's a public discussion, he then said that this is news to me. I did not know that it was public. We're under a court order. This is client. There are things that are mixed in this report that's not public. As your attorney, I would like to have you digest it first as a board, and then by all means, released. So it is a communication problem. I will apologize and tell you that I found about this yesterday. None of us would ever dream of having you come out. You are correct. There will be a conversation, and I will certainly personally make that phone call because, yes, we pay somebody. And Ms. Ross, I understand what you're saying. I do understand. And just found out myself about this yesterday. I will personally, on behalf of the board, make that call and about our expectations and about our communications. And I will apologize to everybody because I know people took time away from their jobs or other places. But I do appreciate the community involvement. We've been trying to open that open dialogue. We have been building this relationship, I thought, moving forward. We don't want to look like this. We don't want to act like we're hiding something. Each time, the numbers are getting bigger. And we're welcoming the participation, and this just did not go well. So I'll make that phone call. I hope you're clear what happened, but that was the expectation. When they said board is hiring you, when they said you're going to report to the board, he thought it would be like where we do upstairs in an executive session where we talk about raises and contracts and private privileged information, and only of late did he realize it would be public. You were next, sir. I'm sorry.
My name is Greer Stewart, class of 1967, Gilbert High School, 1967. That day has something to do specifically with the initiative of East Haven Harbor. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And then in 1994, the court ordered the school board to make a compliance between 20% and 40% hiring. I want to know, how is it that this board is seemingly taking responsibility from all those boards from back that way?
Thank you.
And yet, and still, we are still doing the same thing that they were doing. I didn't come to hear about the attorney and whatever. I just want to know what this board is going to do to comply with these federal court orders that has lasted over 50 years.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I'm Barbara Lipton, and I have a question that might be redundant, but the attorneys are being paid by school board money, is that correct? School. So my taxes are going to pay this attorney that I have no right to know what this attorney is doing for us? I think that I hired the attorney. I pay my taxes.
Ma'am, you have a right to information that will be made public information. But just like our labor attorneys, you don't have a right to listen to those closed rooms. And I'm just saying, I hear what you're saying, but I think there needs to be carved out. Just like with the unions, and we have a union representative, they speak with their attorneys, and we speak with ours in negotiations and unions under court order or with a labor attorney, and I think Ms. Ross would. There is a client-attorney privilege on some information, but all the public information we are eager to hear and we are eager to share. And I don't think anyone on this board would deny that. Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Citrick, I think we need to talk about the elephant in the room. I think we have to recognize that we're talking about two different law firms. We're talking about the law firm that we hired to look at our data and to help us as a board understand if we're actually ready to request unitary status. Okay? I think the concern I'm hearing from the community is that the perception is that even though we don't know what that information looks like, it appears like all we want to do is litigate. And I think that the bigger picture is there is currently a court order. We have not been in compliance for years. Board after board has kicked the can down. This board finally has decided to do something about it. We're trying to educate ourselves, know what we need to do. And my personal interpretation of what's happening is that we're not ready to litigate until we actually know that we are not, or yes, you know, that we are ready for unitary status. So that's one law firm that we're paying that was misinformed about the expectation that he thought it was an executive session, we thought that it was going to be a workshop. So that is actually, if you think about it, in my opinion, that's not his fault. He wasn't told. The other part of it is we have our own attorney who probably could have alerted us that this would have been an issue.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that did not happen.
Yes.
And so we're talking about two different things. And the way this board corporate has decided to handle that, there's no evaluation of the attorney per the request of the board majority. So what will happen is that individual board members, if they feel in any way that our attorney dropped the ball, they will have a conversation with the attorney and let her know that they are not pleased with this situation. That is all that we can do because there is no evaluation per se. I hope that that clarifies it, because we don't want to throw it all in together. And with, you know, and I've been working with Ms. DiAgresta for many years. I know she's very knowledgeable. And I will be having a conversation and trying to understand what happened, because, you know, I only know 50% of it right now. So I want to give her the benefit of the doubt and understand what happened. And I think that, you know, that's what we need to be able to do. It's not about getting angry at each other and figuring out who we're going to punish. It's about how do we identify a problem and how do we move forward. And I think that we will be able to go there. So thank you.
And I do want to say that I think it's unfair, and you can have that conversation with the attorney, but personally, if I was in real estate law and I asked, and I would never think of my real estate lawyer to be babysitting my malpractice lawyer on medical. I don't want to put any blame on Ms. DiAgresta. We didn't hire her for this. She's not monitoring this, and I'm not putting any blame on her. That attorney from this firm was under an assumption. We were under another assumption that he might have known we were making this public. It's a very sad circumstance, but I do agree with Ms. Jimenez that, and to answer to you, it would be easy for us to sit up here and say, you know, I was in high school back then, or I don't know what the other boards did, but the buck stops here. We are responsible. We had decided as a board, I can only answer for what I've known happened in the last 3 years, that we felt that we were falling short as a district. We wanted to know what we were doing well and what we were doing not so well. We wanted to address those issues, and we wanted somebody to come in and gather that and talk to us. So that's what, in answer to you, sir, that's what this board did. And I will say that I don't know what the other boards did, but I'm not going to blame it on them. I'm sitting here now, and I'm taking responsibility. I hope that helped. And I know you had your hand up.
Now, we do. I assume that that is a formal apology for what happened then and what's happening now. But I'm not certain if you understand the impact that not following that DSAG order has played on our community for this length of time. Not only how it has negatively impacted our kids, but even economically, as far as the community is concerned, it has deprived us of due money that was entitled to them. And while the school board had continued to get federal dollars under the assumption that they were compliant, now, I'm not in the mood for actually appearing there to actually hearing about, you know, as much of the apologies and all of the wrong that people did as I am to want to hear exactly when and how are you going to comply. Because you don't need to litigate that. It has already, obviously, from the court, been litigated that there's a wrong been done and it needs to be corrected. And all we want to hear from the community is when and how are you going to comply.
I agree. And we have had several conversations, I'm not sure for there, where there were several facets of that DSAG order. And as I said, some were doing well, some were not, and some they're working on improving. I'm not sure which conversations you were in. So we don't need the attorney's response to be in the proactive mode. I think Dr. Rendell, and again, I don't want to speak for everyone, but my understanding is that the previous superintendent didn't meet with the NAACP. This man does. And there are things about recruitment and things like that. So we're not waiting. I understand what you're saying. If you're asking me to understand and to have empathy,
if the court ordered you in 9-4 to hire minority teachers at a rate of between 20% and 40%, and right now we are about 6-point-something, and this is 2016, there need to be some drastic measures taken in order to show this community that you are willing to comply. I don't think nothing you can say in this meeting would suffice as much as you coming up with a plan to comply with those orders. Because you didn't comply in 67. In 94, they said in order for you to catch up, that you needed to hire on the average between 20% and 40%. That still have not been even addressed. You have not even discussed it.
Yeah, excuse me, sir, we have. And I'm going to let Dr. Rendell step in, because those employment issues have been addressed by his staff under his direction. So would you mind explaining
sure.
some of the things that Dr. Fritz in HR has? Because I don't think I've seen you at those meetings, and it has been discussed.
I came to his office and talked to him about
that. All right, I do want him to address that yeah. specifically because you brought up a specific issue.
Sure. As far as the recruiting practices, we have changed some of the recruiting practices this year, and we'll add some more incentives and initiatives next year. One of the things that we reinstituted this year that we hadn't done for several years was we gave the recruiters the ability to hire on the spot, to offer contracts on the spot. That was something we hadn't been doing for a few years. We went to all of the historically black colleges in the state. Next year, we're going to go out of state. So we've started doing some things differently this year, and we'll do some more things differently next year to try to address the issue of having more African-American teachers in the classroom. So we're not waiting for the Hush-Blackwell report before we take any action. We've been taking action already all year this year to address all of the different aspects of the desegregation order. The report from Hush-Blackwell will show the board the areas that the district is strong in, the areas that it's weak in, suggested strategies to address the areas that it's weak in, and that kind of thing. But it's a comprehensive report, and it is a legal document, and so the board needs to have time to review that first and ask questions of the attorney who prepared the report before sharing it with the public or whatever aspects of the report they want to share with the public.
Have you set any legitimate goals of our members that you expect to have this year? And I noticed you said that you went to the black colleges in-state. Is that any different than any of the boards did previously to you? Is that something new?
Dr. Fritz is right behind you. He's nodding his head. Yes, we have gone to more places this year than we have in the past.
You've gone to more black colleges in-state than you went and had in the past?
Yes. But we were not going to historically black colleges prior to my arrival 2 years ago.
Okay. Now, the
we
first question. What goals have you set that you hope to achieve numerically?
Sir?
I want to know what kind of numbers are you expecting?
The expected ratio is what we're trying to reach every year.
Right.
We're trying to reach the target number.
And, sir, I have many hands. So first thing I do, Ms. Jimenez, that gentleman's been very patient, then you, sir, then Mr. Brown. So, Ms. Jimenez.
Yeah, and I think it's important to keep in mind that every year we do generate a report that gives us all the statistics, not only on our staffing ratios and demographics, but on our student participation in accelerated programs and so on. So the district has been aware. I think we haven't been as aggressive, and we are now being more aggressive. And Dr. Fritz and his staff are making the effort to recruit more African-American teachers. Another part of the DSEG order has to do with buildings and equal access to students. I think that is something that we have complied with. What worries me more than anything else is that in all of these conversations, there is very little discussion about the academic achievement of African-American students. And I think that teachers are a part of that equation. The district is finally working on a plan. And I am a little concerned because, as I have spoken before, the plan is more a multicultural education plan that is not really teasing out the needs of African-American students. But the school district is finally cognizant, and this board is finally cognizant, unlike previous boards, that this is an opportunity to focus on African-American students. So I would ask you all who care about this issue so deeply to please not forget the children. Everybody's talking about the teachers, which is important. Please don't misunderstand me. But more important are our children. What does that academic achievement plan look like? It's in the process of becoming, and it is an opportunity for accountability for all of us here, because that is more concerning to me than anything else. So please pay attention to
Ms. Jimenez, maybe you would like to mention, or I can mention, about the actual on the agenda tonight. we are addressing this and hiring a firm. Maybe could you expand on that, Ms. Jimenez?
Sure.
Just to notify them of our item tonight to address this issue with minorities and Excel classes.
Okay, so tonight's agenda, we do have the approval of a contract with the Equal Opportunity Schools. And the goal of that contract is to not only increase participation of specifically African-American students in international baccalaureate and advanced placement classes, not only to increase, but to support success. Because in the past, I don't know if you recall with ARA, part of the strings with ARA after the recession was that you get money, but in order to get that money, you have to increase minority participation in AP. So what happens is you go out and you recruit AP students that are minority students that are struggling, that already have a deficit in reading and math. You put them in AP classes. Do you think they're going to be successful?
No.
They need support. So unlike the cosmetic compliance that has happened in the past, this board and our superintendent is aware of the complexity of the needs of our African-American students. So this contract is not only to create more opportunity and access, but it's to support those students once they're in these classes. And third, to sustain the success and build upon it. It is a start, but I think you will agree that it is an example of the school district's commitment to doing things differently. It's, you know, we've got a lot of baggage. We've got a lot of baggage. There's a lot of lack of trust. We are trying, fallible as we are, to move forward. And we ask you to keep coming and hold us accountable. This will get done. And this is one step. And I am hopeful that tonight it will be accepted and approved. But I want you to know that we are trying. But it's hard. We've got a system that for so many years has been ignoring this issue at certain levels. And I know that it's not easy for us to get up here. You're going to go, oh, everything is great now. That's not real life. Hold us accountable. I'm sure the board members will appreciate it, and they will do everything in their power to make sure that we comply and that if we are ever ready for unitary status, we will get there. But I think we have a long way to go.
And we've had a very patient man back there.
Sorry.
And a few others behind.
I came to this meeting today, relatively new to Florida, only been here 2 years, because I was totally confounded with the idea that I was sitting in a board meeting and there was going to be a discussion of segregation. Totally confounded. I mean, call separate but equal was cast out by the Supreme Court in 1954. I mean, it's a few years ago. And I'm listening to people talk about getting their ducks in order so that we can determine what is necessary for us to be in compliance with the court order for segregation. It seems to me there must be maybe 150,000, 200,000 orders that have already been complied with that you might look at. I'm really sitting here in disingenuous belief about the statements that are being made about we're trying, we're hoping, we're wishing. I'm sorry, man, the statements you just made about trying to help these kids catch up. Temple University, where I did my study, had a program in place in 1974 to help underprivileged students, acknowledging the fact that they needed to be taught to catch up before they could succeed. I'm sorry, folks. Maybe a new set of eyes might shed some light on the fact that this is glacial movement, and I'm surprised that the people in this room are not standing up with pitchforks and torches. Again, I'm a new person here. I guess I don't know how things go in Indian River County, but it's kind of an outsider looking in. I'm sorry, folks. You're not doing a good job at all.
Good evening. I'm Bishop Peterson, pastor and father of Sinners for Church Deliverance. And I'm here today because what I'm hearing is really deploying for us in the system to advance education among our nation. It doesn't matter black or white. We need a system
that is producing equality to all, because we're all American. Just the other day, there was an application put in at Vero Beach High School for a new council. The principal of that school hired a teacher that had about 3 years' experience in elementary school, and I denied the application of my wife, even who have taught Vero Beach High School for 12 years and went to school and got her degrees. And this principal hired a young lady who had not even achieved her degree yet, and was hired because she was a friend of his wife. That's ridiculous. My wife she had taught Vero Beach High School for 12 years. She worked with the Vero Beach Achievement in Action. She is a staff faculty of that school. And we have taken kids for 4 or 5 years consecutively, taking them across the country, all across the state, from here all the way to Washington, in order to give these kids exposure to colleges where they can make some good choices in school, and take them for weeks at a time for their achievement. And for the high school to hire an inexperienced person over an experienced person who have already achieved their degrees for that office, and turn her down for a person that has 3 years' experience in a primary school, it's ridiculous. It's like the brother said, you need to move up. Your apologies is not really working, because you need to put in action the things that are necessary to move evenly across the board all of the students in Vero Beach and in the county of Indian River. And there is no exception. There should be no exception. All of these students need to be educated. All of our teachers need to be hired. If they're qualified, give them a place. If we need to hire from 20% to 40% of black teachers, and that measurement hasn't met up to about 6.7%, something is wrong with your system. And you need to reanalyze your system and find out what's going on. Something is wrong, and it needs to be primarily be on our primary agenda to correct it.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, you were next.
You know, we could sit here all day, and if you knock a man down, you pick him up. Dr. Rendell did do the Black Achievement. He threw that multicultural, because in 2016, multicultural means this, that, and other. But according to the DCA board in 1967 and 94, it meant black and white. African American achievement. That I'll get Dr. Rendell. I'm conflicted. I'm happy because I saw this long ago. This Hush Blackwell thing, to me, from day one, Dr. Warren and I talked, is a joke. We knew it then. As Ms. Jimenez said, we could have gotten to the table and taken care of this without $200,000. We started out $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, and it just kept going on and on. We didn't need that. This man came in yesterday, 2 years ago. That's yesterday. He sees it already. How do you think we feel? This, to me, litigation that bothers me. Because, Mr. Frost, I heard you say many times, we're moving to unitary status. No, you're not. How dare you, when you're not, as Mr. Stewart say, you haven't complied with nothing. It's not rocket science. It is not. It's simple. Do right according to my children. All of them. Do what the law tells you to do. Do what the DCA already told you years ago that you were not doing. When I got a school that's a, and I told Dr. Rendell, I'm not going to throw any punches, that he has a B school. But only 22% of African Americans at that school are at grade level. Somebody do the math. I went to school 3 days and I paid attention to them three. It don't make sense for a school to be B, but my African American students are not achieving. Something's wrong.
And you talking about litigation? That we can't talk about the desafeguarding because of litigation? That is not what we started this about, Ms. MJ. We started this about transparency. We started this about you calling me out, Mr. Brown, well, you need to come to the table. Mr. Brown, you need to do this, you need to do that. We've done that. We made some progress. But in the 12th hour, I hear litigation. No, 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 that's not transparency. That's not honesty. That's not fairness. That's not respect. That's total disrespect for the NAACP, which I lead. No threats, Ms. MJ. Just calling it as it is. I keep hearing from your attorney, litigation. Several people have asked, what litigation? Attorney Rawls said, if I hired a lawyer, you working for me, you follow my rules, you do as I say do. Mrs. Seminary, you found out yesterday, right? Ask me when I found out.
When did you find out?
This morning. Now, if somebody please help me out this. No disrespect, Dr. Rendell, but you knew last week. I would say, Mr. Brown, I got a problem. I need your help. We've been through all of this, and now the lawyers say this, but I want to ask a question to you board members who paid this money. I can't go for this about they didn't know. They should have known. That we've been openly discussing this at the board and the NAACP since when, Ms. MJ? It's been about 9 months?
Yeah, I was going to say maybe a year.
And your lawyer didn't know that this was an open dialogue? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm slow or something, but this does not bear well on us working forward and moving forward. Because as Mr. Stewart said, it has great implications, devastating implications on our community, on our children. Ms. Jimenez, I applaud you for all your work. Because you've been a true soldier. But it appears as if nobody else can get the fact that we are destroying the lives of children. We are destroying the lives of children. We are destroying the lives of children. When you have 46% of African American males who are incarcerated in Indian River County coming from your school district, we got a problem. When the streets of Gilbert, Florida, all of these people sitting in there know of are full of kids that can't, that are functioning at a sixth grade level or less. See, we see the bad side of what's going on in this school district. And I tried to be, and Dr. Morgan and I, 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, strategizing. We got a lot of answers, but guess what, Ms. Simpson? Nobody invites us to the table.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Wait a minute. Aren't you meeting with Mr. Dr. Rendell?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about members on the Multicultural Committee. I'm talking about members on that committee. I'm talking about members on that committee. I'm talking about being at the table. I am not relevant unless I'm at the table where the decisions are being made. I asked Dr. Rendell the other day, is there any African-American male in the Indian River County School District that's in a power position?
Carter Morrison? Carter Morrison. Director of Assistant Superintendent for Finance and Operations.
Let's go where my children interact.
One principal.
What? African-American male.
One African-American male principal.
Principal,
Mr. Hart.
Who is that principal?
No, two.
Mr. Hart.
Two.
He's a principal?
Yes. Sure he is.
Hart. Oh, Mr. Hart is alternative.
Yes. And what about Ms. Idolette?
He's African-American.
I say African-American male. It's, Ms. Simchek, is subliminal.
Oh, okay.
When my children see this, it's subliminal. Yes. The fact that African-American men cannot achieve, that they can't hold these positions. So why should I do all of this to achieve this and I'm never going to be afforded that? When I walk through this district, and I'm being open and honest, because this is painful, we have gone almost a year being humble, working to find out that all of a sudden, litigation. Yes. We can't talk to y'all because of litigation. That is sickening. When we were supposed to be at the table, we were supposed to be, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I could go on, and this could go on, and I know it's not going to change, but you need to know that relationship is in a speed bump. Because this don't feel right, don't look right, and it's not right for us to come here tonight, today, and be told about litigation.
I do understand, and I hear you, and at such a late date, I wouldn't expect anything else and would feel the same. But I do want to say, if we were making every bit of headway and were totally in compliance With the DSAG, and I'm sure Ms. Ross would understand this as an attorney, this ultimately will need an attorney. Everything is complied. This will always end up in the court. This will always be in the court because the end to this is unitary status, and we will need an attorney to represent the school district to take this to the court. Even as we improve and we have 100% compliant, we will, it's not this will never go to the court. This, and I think Ms. Jimenez, who you say champions, I just want to say, she is a logical, intelligent woman that will tell you, this district will need an attorney, which we've hired, to represent us either now or 20 years down the road, which it should never be. But we don't say that it ends up, it will end up in the courts. That's the court system. We're under a court order. It's totally different than what we're talking about, but don't think that that court aspect will disappear. Let's hope, as we said, it's progress and we're moving forward this board. But don't think that that attorney aspect and court appointment to attend or attain unitary status will never come. I would think everybody would say, I hope it comes sooner than later. But please understand that we will need an attorney, and this attorney and firm has done it for other districts, and they have pointed out what's good and bad with what they're doing and made suggestions that maybe our staff, which we may say that our staff are unclear or can recognize. But this board has been, and will, and you know, as I said, I'll sit here, I won't let the board do what they want, but I will say that I can't go back and change previous boards. We've been here for three years, we've talked about it, we're working towards it. This is a disappointing day for all. If you don't believe we're disappointed, that's okay, but we are. But we also have to take the words of this man. I do have to make that phone call and make sure that nothing like this happens again. And again, that's all I can really say for the board. But Ms. Ross, please, if you can, you know.
I'm just going to say one thing and I'll be done. When I was at a meeting, a different board meeting, and walked into the wrong room, and inside that room there must have been 14 educators from this school district. Not one was a minority. Okay. No browns, no blacks. Just all white males and females. I was appalled. And I had classmates from 1971 who wondered why I won't go to the class reunion. Because what happened to us in 1971, 1969, is now happening to my grandchildren who are not a part of the school district. They're grateful for that. We don't have to get to the litigation. We can come together. Look at the people that are in here. We can come together and take care of this situation. And when it gets to the court, the only thing the court has to do is put a stamp of approval on it because we've done it right there. We don't have to litigate. We don't have to.
Would you agree that we will need a lawyer to represent us, though?
Because you're in the court. Yeah,
yes. And that's all I wanted to clarify. I agree with everything you've said.
But let's have the court do one thing. We've got a preacher here.
Thank you.
Say, you've done a great job. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. And we will. We've made that commitment, Ms. Jimenez. And then, you know, there's not much more we could do with that information.
There isn't that much more to say, but I think that it is important for us to sit here and listen to you tell us what you're thinking. That needs to be heard. And I think, you know, whether we call it litigation or not, there is an implied threat. Because when we initially started this process, we were in a search mode. What have we done? What's going on? You know, we've had a lot of the data, and then it got really complicated. So we need to hear both sides. So I just would encourage us to work together, continue that accountability. Dr. Rendell, make sure your staff is, you know, I know that with the Multicultural and Diversity Committee, there have been times when people that should be at the table are not at the table, and it becomes, we're going to meet, and then we'll talk to you. That is not how you call.
cooperate. So that's not my responsibility. That is yours. However, one thing that I do find disturbing is the minister's allegation that there was unfairness in a job hiring practice. This is 50% of the story. There's another 50% of the story. I think because this is put out in the open and who knows how it's going to be translated in the media, I think that it is in the interest of the school district to look into that, to have your staff look into it and report to the board so that we can make sure that this doesn't happen, because we can't say one thing and have policies that say one thing and then do something else with impunity. We can't build bridges if we are not willing to say, okay, this is what we're doing well and this is where we need work. And I sincerely believe that this board and our superintendent want to do the right thing. And I know that trust is difficult, but we can't just polarize ourselves. We have to keep talking with each other, no matter how angry you are with us right now and how much you don't trust us. We got to walk that walk together. So please keep the information coming, and we will be open, because that is our job. We don't have to agree all the time, but we have to listen, because we will learn as we listen, and you will learn about what we're trying to do if you're willing to listen to us. So let's do this together, because when we get angry like this, we're not going to make progress.
All right, and I just want to end with, you have a final comment, sir.
Yes, I wanted to address something I heard you say. You was attempting to separate academic achievement from the actual compliance with the DSAGOG and higher minority teachers. And I want to ask the board, has anyone ever read anything by Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu of Howard University? Anybody? Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu, and I think I talked to Dr. Bradell about it, is by far and large the most knowledgeable and thorough educator on educating minority kids, especially black kids. As a matter of fact, he has well over 35 publications that he has done in this. And it's kind of hard for me. I know when they was preparing me to go to war in Vietnam, they always had me, educated me about the enemy and as well as about the terrain that I was about to go in. It's hard for me to believe that you can have my interest at large if you don't know nothing about me.
That's right.
It's kind of hard. Now, if Dr. Jawanza says something that Mr. Brown was talking about, that would correlate to you the importance of educating and having a role model. Because remember now, all of us took American history. We know that the reason England came to America, the primary reason was because of taxation without representation. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Of course. And then now here, when we deal with our school system, our kids, you telling me that their educational performance can be all that when they may not see a black male teacher until you get to college. Not academic. I ain't talking about on the football field, and I'm not talking about PE and agriculture. I'm talking about an academic male teacher. He may not meet until he gets to college. And you gonna tell me that you expect all of them to be able to perform on a level that you expect them to perform on, and yet they are not being represented. I got problems with that. I got problems with the fact that none of us are trying to learn enough, because I told you when we were at that meeting before, when we were dealing with this situation over at the freshman, the freshman learning center, and we were seeing all this come up, and I told Dr. Riddell, I felt that the solution to the problem was to educate people. Now, the teachers need to be educated somewhat as to what to expect from our black kids. They really don't know how to deal with it. And then now again, telling me that we need to litigate. I don't have no authority by whether I'm going to litigate. If the judge passes all, my only choice is to comply. There's no litigation necessary. It's quite obvious if there's an order been passed down that somebody needs to be compliant. You see, you don't negotiate litigation when you got court order. We don't need no litigation. All we need to do is come up with measures. How are we going to comply? Drastic measures. Whatever it takes. Don't wait till next year to send somebody out of state. You can send people out of state this year. And get some, go to these black colleges like Tennessee State University. Go to South Carolina State University. Go to Clapham. Go to North Carolina A&T. Go to some of these colleges, get you some people where our kids can identify and they're going to take an interest in our kids and ensuring and in teaching them, not just looking and focusing on their behavior to try to find out how they can put them out of class, how we can put them into special education. Yeah. Because if you don't understand me, you can't teach me.
Amen.
That's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You might want to write it down. He got a whole host of stuff that you can read and would help you learn how to educate our kids.
All right.
Because then, I'm an educator too. I'm a retired school teacher.
Thank you, sir.
And I had to go to Fort Pierce in order for me. This is another thing. Our community are full of educators, of administrators that went to St. Lucie County, got an administration, a lot of the school board. And had to come back here after they retired because this school board always finds a way to be good.
That's right.
Ma'am, wait a minute. I will have to keep some order because Mr. Hart had his hand raised patiently.
No, I just wanted to add what he was saying there. With me being a member of the SAC committee over at Dodgertown Elementary for the past 12 years, those were some of the discussions that were being talked about in those meetings on how can we work with our children and understand just what he just said. And that is the Title I school. The majority of the children there are minorities. And that is something that I have learned over the years too, that is not going on. You're bringing teachers in that do not understand the culture that is going on in those areas. So that is something that really needs to be focused on tremendously. And like I say, I've been a part of that with the SAC committee at Dodgertown for the last 12 years. And those are the questions that constantly come over. How can we work with the children?
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Ms. Ross, would you now like to speak?
No.
Thank you. Yes, that's all right. And I understand. And we do appreciate your input. And yes, ma'am.
My name is Mary Bagley McKinney. And Dr. Chris said, this has only been going on for the recruitment for 2 years out of the state. That's not the truth. Ms. Long has gone out of the state. Dr. Gibson has gone out of the state. When they bring the black to sit in every time, the principals don't accept them.
Thank you. I do want to say, you know, if there isn't and I don't want to make the assumption that it's too much, too little, too late, that you're feeling, I understand that, but this board is honestly trying to make an earnest effort to move forward and accept the responsibility of that DSEG order, and I know there's years of lapse. I do want to say in behalf of Mr. Fritz that was not mentioned, I know that he saw when he mentioned in other recruitments that a part of the problem was the finance of moving and relocating, and he immediately went to Seacoast to arrange that. So there's some progress so that people could get, you know, to help and assist. So we are working, they are working, we'll continue to work. That's an open promise that we've made as this board. You know, I can only accept my work here, and then we move as board corporate because I'm only one person, but this board has voted to progress. I know it's not on the timeline, you know, I can't go back, or we can't go back, and it's not on the quickest timeline that you'd like to see, and there's disappointment today. But
I'd like to know if you have a projection in mind. I want to know what figures are you hoping to meet, because I know at 9:40 they told you 20% to 40%. I'd like to know if the board has set a number that they hope to achieve this year in hiring minorities. I've sent two people to the school board to see about getting a job, and neither one of them have not been hired. I just don't understand. you're not going to ever meet that order as long as you keep turning them down. You're just not going to meet. And they, your expectations will be on. If you expect them to be like you, I doubt very soon that's going to happen. So then that means sometimes in order for us to fulfill our quota, sometimes we may have to bring our standards a little bit down, because these people may be able to relate better to our kids than what you need. I'm not talking about our standards. I'm talking about standards of the culture, your cultural standards now. Because this obviously got to be what we all have the same case.
Yeah. Sir. You know, we've had a lot of things go on today, but we'll call on someone, they'll speak. When you start cross, now we have people with all hands. We want to be fair. That's all. And Ms. Jimenez is next.
Yes. And I think we should. I understand the frustration. I hear what you're saying, but I would caution us to start thinking in terms of quotas, because if we care about children, we want to make sure that we have qualified teachers in front of children. The dance of quotas will not benefit all children. So we want to make sure that we have qualified teachers. And I ask you to think about that, because I know that, the argument very well said could be, well, you may need to lower your standards so you could have a role model. But let me tell you, in other aspects of my life, where I work in organizations that want minority representation, my experience has been that they hire minorities that, don't meet the qualifications. And then when they fail, what do we hear? We gave them a chance, but you see, they failed. So I think, I'm not giving any definitives here, but I think you need to weigh the complexity of that and keep the children at the front of your minds. Who is best for children? And we are going to hear about the allegation that there could potentially be some unfairness in the way employees are treated, possible employees are treated, and that is something we can control. So I know Dr. Rendell will do that. I know that we're getting close to closing this conversation, and I just want to share two of the things that I'm hearing beyond your frustration. And number one is that the district needs to be asking itself, who in our school district is doing research on best practices for academic achievement for African-American students? Have we looked into, and I can't pronounce the name, Dr. Kunshafu at Howard University? Okay, Kunshafu. Who's doing that? So that's a question for Dr. Rendell to follow up. And the second one is, I hear over and over that we need to make sure that teacher training, so that our teachers know how to deal with the diversity in their classroom, needs to be strengthened. And it is beyond whatever course we have right now that's online. That doesn't seem to be cutting it. We have been doing some of this diversity training for years. The evidence shows that is not necessarily really doing what it needs to do. So I think that's another learning moment for the school district. What does that training look like? And I hope it's not like when we did the Ruby Payne, years ago. She talks about the culture of poverty. You may agree, disagree, but this is just an example. So Ms. Payne came to Vero Beach. She talked with our principals. The teachers did professional learning communities. And then years later, when we're having these issues and you go to a SAC meeting and you ask, okay, so how are we applying this? The answer is, we did that 3 years ago. We were finished. We're not finished. It's an ongoing conversation. So I think the school district can't up the ante on that. So I challenge us as board members to be mindful of that. And then Dr. Rendell, to look into that, because I think that will help make a difference for our students.
I'm going to say this, that, again, I'm sorry that the presentation was not brought forward. We're going to work on that as quickly as we can. We thank you for all attending. We've had people speak and multiple times speak. I'm going to wrap this up with the two ladies that have been patient with their hands up, and then we're going to move on, because we didn't even have a presentation today, but we wanted to make sure that we let you know what was going on, and also let you know that we want to hear what you have to say. So, Ms. Warrior, Dr. Warrior, you had your hand up, and then young lady in the back, and then we're going to wait for this report and continue, and we hope you understand. Ms. Warrior.
One thing, and I'm not going to speak for the children, but I think when you talk about, you said cultural competence, that we don't look like you do when we come, that you don't, those are the standards that maybe that you have to redo. I don't think he meant lower the standards for our kids, because we know any schools where our kids have excelled, they have very, very high standards, not low standards. And so what he was talking about, I think he said, was cultural competence, not, you know, what we look like. The second one is, we're in the budget process. And I know I've said through workshops with that, a lot of things I don't understand, all of it. But I know that one of the things that, when I said anything to Mr. Morris Mooney, we talk about even the African-American Achievement Plan, the multicultural plan, is if you send me, they costed it out, if they costed it out. And I know we have a line item there for $80,000, but I don't know that that's based on other, anything other than, I don't know specifically what you wanted it for, Dr. Rendell. But, I mean, do we have, because we're coming up on the public input session, whatever, two of those, do we have the money to do what we're talking about doing? Because what I heard this morning is we need to be very cautious with our budget. So can we do the things that we're talking about doing?
To speak specifically to the $80,000 budget line item so far for the African American Achievement Plan, that's what we came up with based on identified training costs. If we were to bring in trainers to work with our teachers on teaching students of diversity, how much would a typical training like that cost to teach, you know, all of our teachers these different things? So adding that up with a couple other initiatives like the one, similar to the one that's going to be on the board agenda tonight, you know, that's where we came with the $80,000. You know, that's a beginning point for the African American Achievement Plan and the things associated with it. So that's where we came up with the $80,000.
Thank you. And the $48,000 tonight that's on the board is not part of that $80,000, Ms. Warrior. I don't know if you remember, the $48,000 this evening for achievement improvement is not part of that. And the last speaker, ma'am, you've been very patient. Thank you.
My name is Clarissa, and I just want to add to Ms. Claudia, you said the teachers being qualified. My thought is that we need to invest and have training for the principals to have cultural diversity training as well, because they're the ones hiring the teachers. Can't put it all on the teachers. The principals are hiring the teachers and the counselors that are working with our students. So, you know, we need to look into that as well.
All right. Now, with that, I want to thank all of, for that particular item, all of the people that came for that. If you are leaving, I'll give you a second because, you know, but so I'm going to move on to my second item and then go to rotation because the second item we had put on the board, it was about the school board audit committee, but under members, we had discussed the last time under members matters, we were going to wait to, we'll have a board turnover, so to have somebody assigned to the audit committee and then have somebody else come in and represent, and thank you all for coming, by the way, and to come in, and so that was put on this board agenda, but we had decided to wait till afterwards. So that's with my second item. So I will go to Mr. Frost, revisions to the code of student. Well, wait a minute. Before we dig in, do you want to go for a quick? We're going to do a five-minute recess, and please board 5 minutes because this is our discussion, and we have a lot to get through.
Thank you, Bob. Let's see.
I'm going to do that again because. All right, we're back to our discussion session today, July 26th. Thank you all for coming. Right now, we're moving to board members' matters under Sean Frost for the revisions to the Code of Student Conduct Handbook. I know this was put on
at our last board meeting. If there's anything you want to share with us,
it was put on, and in fact, with the indulgence of the board, to the point of this is a process. This is an annual process, and rather than address it now, it's just simpler to address it in a timely fashion. To the point that it was made in the board meeting that we'll revisit it at that time, as it doesn't make sense for this board to today consider and go through that entire reiteration and before the Code of Conduct Committee and all those things. So, with the indulgence of the board, I'm just going to replace that item and spend a little bit of time with something that seems to be somewhat timely, and that is, I apologize, I literally should be right here. Or, no, right here.
Oh, okay, thank you.
I apologize. I literally just went home at lunch and they sent this over, and Ms. Stang made copies. But what it is it's Escambia County's Fraud, Waste, and Abuse Hotline Program, and I'll be happy to share these documents with anyone. In fact, I'll put them up on the website or whatever, or you can just request, and I'll forward you an email. And I don't know how we compile documents after the meetings, but if that's the case, then I would appreciate these also appearing in there. In essence, what the board has to review, and I'll just hit the highlights of this, is in our meeting tonight, we're going to be discussing I believe it's consent item F, which details missing gear, essentially. In the Marine Corps, we just call it missing gear, equipment that has gone missing. And this may be one way to offset it. So what we, what the board, if I'll direct you to the memorandum, the cover page here, if you will, with the gray sidebar. It's a letter dated March 11, 2013. Actually, it's a study. And Escambia discovered that 36 districts, 54% of them, obviously it's 37 now that they've adopted it, have some form of hotline at the time of the survey. And of those, they looked at different ways that the data was directed, and whether or not it was a third-party vendor hotline service. So what they discovered, and you can read for yourself, just in general, what Escambia ended up doing is going with a company called The Network. They looked at numerous options, which, of course, we will, if it's the pleasure of the board, we'll do the same, look at what's the best out there. What they settled on was on page 3, The Network, about two-thirds of the way down the page. Mm-hmm. Their cost was $6,500 to $10,000. And what it essentially does is it allows community members the opportunity and employees the opportunity to essentially share information without fear of reprisal. It is what Escambia decided to do was a anonymous phone and web portal. And if you look at the other document, which I believe is just continuous for you, but it's the study that was done in March of 2015 after a little over a year of implementation, and the lessons learned. So what they learned is that they established an anonymous hotline for reporting of fraud, waste, abuse, and other matters, basically an ethics hotline. And complaints were lodged via telephone or internet, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Once received, the complaints were transcribed and the complaint report sent via email to the district investigator, the assistant superintendent of human resources, and the deputy superintendent. Now, we heard something a little earlier today that would be a perfect case for something like this. If you feel as though there was some mismanagement or there was an error in employment, this would be one way to report that. And it would come, the way they decided to do it was the superintendent actually had some things that went to different directions, but ultimately, I believe it was the deputy superintendent, but it's kind of a much larger district, and it would be more appropriate to my mind. And again, this is just to introduce the idea, then Dr. Rendell will consider the idea and hopefully bring something to us. But as the previous item, as we looked at our audit committee, that's one of the purviews of this, is some of that information went directly to the audit committee. So if you look at appendix, page 13, if you will, they had some things that just went to the audit committee, things like falsification of customer records, fraud, fraudulent insurance claims, improper loans to executive. Well, that's a little different. Kickbacks, policy issues, retaliation of whistleblowers, theft, and these are the ones that, you know, obviously have the greatest financial impact directly. Thefts of goods or services, theft of time. So one of the things they did is they put a sticker on their white fleet, if you will, and if a vehicle was parked in a residential neighborhood and it has a sticker on it that, you know, if a white fleet vehicle, which they said was the most often, on page 7 it says, per their discussion with the Director of Transportation, stickers were only applied to the white fleet vehicles because these vehicles are most prone to abuse and relative anonymity. So if you see white fleet vehicles at Walmart in the middle of the day, or you know, at the mall, then someone can make a call, and then that would be investigated. And what's important is that this would just be a communication tool, and it would be a first tier, so that we're hearing about things via this third party hotline, which if you look at Appendix A, occurrences by identity type, known versus anonymous. They had 30 anonymous and 12 known. So the anonymity factor certainly is something, and we see it in the media, you know, for fear of reprisal or so-and-so doesn't want to say anything. So this actually will open up our transparency. We'll be surprised less, and this board has made an issue out of transparency in two directions. I feel that this would be a step in the right direction for the board to consider this hotline.
I have a question for you.
Sure. So
not having read this, I think this is very relevant to the audit committee when you look at the way this is broken down. The complaint categories are broken down, and the first column, as you said, is mostly financial. However, there's a second column that deals with more people and relationship issues. So, for example, customer relations, discrimination, employee relations, production quality concerns, safety issues and sanitation, sexual harassment, substance abuse, and workplace violence and threats. Those do not go in this study or in this particular setup. They don't go to an internal auditing, which, you know, the audit is just financial and fiscal. It makes sense. But then the question is, for the people that do this and capture this information, how is the school district set up? Do they have an ombudsman or someone that deals with these issues? Or, you know, not having had time to...
Sure, no, I understand that I caught everyone a little bit flat-footed with this one.
Yeah, no, that's fine, but you read it, so you might...
That's a great question. What they do is it's based on sort of silo, if you will, by the district. Mm-hmm. So if it's something that's employee-related, it goes to the director, the assistant, the superintendent, the HR. So it goes to HR for the possibility of an investigation. And again, the final buck stops with the superintendent. But things like safety issues and sanitation, that would probably... I don't recall exactly how Escambia did it, but it would be reasonable to conclude that that went more to their facilities department. So if, you know, if there was a thought of mold in a school, they would receive this, and additionally the superintendent would see it, and the chair of the board would see it, and the school board members would have access to all of this as well.
Wonderful.
So rather than, I believe Mr. Searcy knows of a situation that we weren't able to discuss at length this morning, the entire board would be apprised of that. And due to our sunshine laws, you know, we can't talk about really anything. We sort of avoid each other, in fact, because all it takes is one photograph published in the newspaper and, you know, suddenly you're plotting the takeover. So we are on the side of caution, and that doesn't necessarily lead to the best information sharing. And this could be one way in which we share information. Things like what Escambia found in their one-year study was that the bulk of them were safety and sanitation issues, then policy issues, employee relations, discrimination, customer relations, conflicts of interest, sexual harassment, theft of time, theft of goods and services. It's difficult, and again, I know we're going to have a greater at-length discussion, but it's difficult to believe that an ice maker would go missing without someone taking note.
You know, I had been an asset manager, so I just do want to defend that. A lot of times what that is it breaks, they throw it out, and they don't notify the person properly on how to take it off the books. So then they say, well, doing an audit once a year, oh gosh, what did I do last year? You know, it's lost / unaccounted for, but it's not really lost. And that's a lot of the stuff that happens, and a lot of stuff is sold at surplus for a penny on the dollar. But I did want to say that, you know, one, I'll give you my pet peeve. You know, this is one of my things. When I see government, any government agency, and it is Florida, I understand, sort of like your white sticker and whatever. You know, they may there may be a very good reason for them to be at Walmart because they had to pick up something that broke and they can't get from their supplier overnight or something. But, you know, you need to investigate. People don't know that. It's public perception. My biggest pet peeve is a running engine and somebody has gone in with a government vehicle and got their morning coffee and got talking and because they didn't want to get into a hot car. And, you know, I'm just telling you mine. So I think that, and it does happen, and I'm not saying this agency, but so I'll just be generic and say all agencies. So I have those kind of, you know, because here we are stewards of the taxpayers' money, and they see that, and they say, okay, they don't have enough money to, we'll bring it back to our district, to pay teachers, but look at them. So, you know, it happens, it doesn't happen. You have good employees, you have bad employees, you have things happen. I also know for every problem that we have, there's probably an outside agency that says they could fix it at a price. Mm-hmm. I think that you've gotten a good response. Maybe Dr. Rendell can check what I don't know where this falls under risk management, what they're doing, what's our hotline. In the old days, before computers, remember you used to have those boxes all around that you could put your anonymous complaint in at the workplace. And some of them would be, you know, signed Mickey Mouse or something, but they would put their complaint there because that's the biggest fear of repercussion. And that's with anything in any place. So I think you are absolutely right. You are probably going to get more of the truth. You're probably going to get a little bit of troublemaking. And I say that in all honesty because people will do that. You know, they'll fabricate, you know, so Johnny so-and-so doing this, and, you know, they had every reason. But I also think there's a need for it. So I would be very supportive on asking the superintendent to take a look at this and see how this district is handling that. And could we just placehold this for the next meeting under you, and maybe you could get back to us?
Sure.
And
time to review this.
So that gives us time to look at this. And
well, it would give me time to review what our current policies are. Right now, I believe any allegation of employee misconduct is reported directly to Dr. Fritz. And, you know, so that's not necessarily anonymous.
Yes.
And it's not advertised on the back of a white fleet, you know, with an 800 number or anything like that. So I did work in a district that had an ethics hotline, and it was very effective.
Okay.
As is detailed in the report here, just the fact of having a hotline and people knowing that there is a hotline does curb some misbehavior.
Okay. Well,
just
I'm glad
having
to hear you have
itself.
Experience in
yeah.
that. That's great. That's
well, I didn't
good.
Call the hotline. Or, I don't think I was
well,
called about that.
Okay.
And in fact, that's actually you know, Dr. Rendell hit it on the head in one of the you know in the consultant's report for Scandia. We didn't pay for this consultant. Mm-hmm. They said that it's difficult to know the impact because most of it is deterrence. In that you know having an ethics hotline, mm-hmm. you know the fear of reprisal is. Sufficient oftentimes.
That's good.
Okay.
Is that good? Mr. Searcy?
For the record, that's just item that Mr. Strauss was talking about a minute ago that he and I were going to talk about this morning was addressed at a meeting. It wasn't.
Oh.
Way, and we do have the press here.
Sure.
So make sure they understand. Not ever violate the sunshine law.
Okay. Thanks.
No, what?
Now that's code. I don't know what that is. So go ahead.
No. What Mr. Searcy is pointing to is that this morning we were in an open meeting when he brought that up. It wasn't at
coffee.
Right. It wasn't coffee and Panera or at CBA or anything like that. It was just
in a government vehicle with its engine running.
With it, yeah, while we're
okay.
No, that right. that was mentioned it was this morning.
Thank you.
So do it up. TV.
All right. So, Mr. Searcy?
One other thing, sort of related to that, have we ever thought about giving the teachers
under, folks that are supervised by a supervisor or principal, the opportunity to have upstream views on their supervisors?
I'm not sure that we've done that here. There is a process for that. One of the tools is a 360-degree survey, where leaders are basically graded by all the people they work with, so subordinates, colleagues, and superiors. And we could look at that in the future. That's not something we've done in the past.
I frequently hear that the employees are being criticized or whatever, the principal's not doing a good job. You know, we may not hear all that, but I just think those reviews are good. I was in college, and in every class, you give out a survey at the very end, and the teachers or the students grade you and your performance.
Correct.
And I just think that it would be very good, especially at the upper level. I mean, I don't know how they would do it at the lower level, but I think that would be something that we ought to look into. I mean, I know you don't have anything else to look into.
Well, one mechanism that we already have in place is, Ms. Cannon raised her hand over there, is the IRCEA does have a survey that teachers fill out on administrators, and then we do get copies, I have them up on my desk actually, of the results of those surveys, and I can review those and see how the staff is viewing the leadership at the individual schools. So we do have that in place already.
Can I ask, do they have what's really bad is you do these surveys, but then you write down what position do you have, and that's totally anonymous, and then you know.
No, it's the link for the surveys is sent out individually to the teachers. I personally compiled the data, printed it out. We don't put it online in any way, shape, or form because we want teachers to be as open as they can, and we also want administrators to hopefully read this and act upon what the teachers are talking about. So, if somebody else got hold of the link, I suppose that somebody who was not a teacher could possibly take the survey. But for the most part, it's not out there, and we also choose not to put it out through email or on our website because we want this to actually enact some change as opposed to just slam it be a vehicle to slam our administrators. We want to hopefully see for the administrators to know what their teachers are thinking.
Thank you.
At the college, maybe they weren't quite up with us on technology, but it was actually a piece of paper that each student actually filled out, and it was an envelope. And one of the students had the envelope, and they all put their little things in it and mailed it to someone. I don't know where it showed up, but they were all pretty good people. But it works. And if people find out that their comments are going to be known to the teacher, they may not say anything. Because of retribution, and this district has an awful lot of that fear of retribution.
Sure. I think that's in general, not only private, but in government employment. I don't think we're unique to that. I think government or even private, I mean, who would tell their boss what they really think? And that, like you said, that fact of anonymity creates genuineness with an evaluation. So I think you're right, exactly. Is that
good?
All right. Ms. Jimenez.
Yes, I don't have any written item, but I do want to do a little follow-up on the Code of Student Conduct. Just because in the 8 years that I've been on the board, this is the first time that the board was so divided on the vote to approve the Code of Student Conduct. It was a 2-3 vote. And so I think that it's important I know that there were people at the board meeting that were trying to understand what was happening. So I just wanted to take a moment and just address 4 issues that came up at the meeting about the Code of Student Conduct. And one of the issues had to do with dress and grooming for students. And I will read the language that was on the Code of Conduct and then the new language so you can appreciate and the community can appreciate the differences and how the school district is trying to make sure that we respect, that all students are respected. So the old document said, dress practices must not be indecent, vulgar, or disruptive to an orderly learning environment, period. The added language, and must not cause or result in discrimination against,
bullying or harassing of other students or school staff. And that sentence was important because we have had issues. There's been racial tensions. There's been issue with T-shirts with Confederate flags. And so it is important, unfortunately, to clarify. So that was one item that was contentious. Another item that was contentious was a sentence about talking about bullying and harassment. And the part of that sentence says that when you deal with this, it says, this applies, the policy, whether incidents occur on school grounds, at school-sponsored events, through school computer networks, all school grounds, or in any way have an impact on school safety and positive school climate, period. The new language says, to ensure a bully-free school environment, schools shall practice the following. 1, identify where and when bullying occurred. 2, train all school personnel to recognize bullying. 3, increase adult supervision at campus hotspots. 4, create an anti-bullying task force charged with educating students and staff. And 5, integrate anti-bullying materials into curriculum for discussion and role play. Given the reality of bullying in our schools, given the fact that students leave our schools and go to private schools and charter schools because their parents' issues are not addressed, since I've been on the board, I have talked to many parents who have come to me and explained to me how they didn't feel their students were safe and how the bullying affected their family, and that's why they were leaving the school district. That is why I think the committee was wise to actually point out what needs to be done to avoid bullying, because a very general statement of no bullying didn't do the job, and we have lost students as a result. So I think it would almost be disrespectful to students that are currently dealing, because I know there's kids today in our schools, even though they're on vacation, that have dealt with bullying, and this helps to clarify that. And then the third issue was about the way things were worded in the glossary. And this was not as contentious, but it did elicit community input, and that is our definition of a gang symbol. And the way it's defined, and this is new language in the Code of Student Conduct, a visual way gang members identify their affiliation. This can take many forms, including slogans, gang graffiti, hand signs, gang initial code words and numbers, bandanas, and any other marking or images that represents gang affiliation. So that was problematic because sometimes, you know, the marking and the images, there are so many ways you can interpret that. And so I think here the problem was we need to really get a grip on what we're trying to say and what we're trying to prevent. So that was not up for discussion, but there were concerns. And I think that, you know, in the future, they should be addressed. And lastly, there was also a new definition for protected class. And so the wording that was added was race, color, national origin, sex, in parentheses, including sexual orientation, transgender status or gender identity, close parentheses, disability, including HIV/AIDS, and that's all in parentheses, or sickle cell trait, close parentheses, pregnancy, marital status, age, except as authorized by the law, religion, military status, and ancestry, or generic information, I'm thinking maybe genetic information, which are classes protected by the state or federal law. And there was an argument to remove that because we all understand that. And unfortunately, we don't always understand that. There's a lot of misunderstanding around human sexuality, homosexuality, transsexuality, disease transmission, where it really does behoove the school district to clarify that. And the interesting thing is that already in our school board policies approved February 9, 2016, we have policies 1122, 2260, 3122, 4122, and I think that's it, and 5517.01 under bullying and harassment that already comply with Senate Bill 982 and clarify that an individual's transgender status falls within the scope of sex as protected class. Therefore, what our staff did and the community did with when they worked on this was basically to comply with existing board policy and to comply with state policy, and to recognize that regardless of what our perspectives are and our personal beliefs are, we are working with children that come from diverse backgrounds, and all of them deserve respect. That's the minimal we could do. This is not policy or law. It is just a clarification of what we mean by protected class, and we already have it in 6 or 7 different policies. So, you know, this is worth bringing up because, you know, our board is rarely divided on some of these issues that are common sense for students. So I think that, you know, a couple of people had asked me, you know, what was that about? And I just think, in fairness, because we don't have an opportunity at board meetings to really discuss these issues in a prolonged way, I just wanted to, you know, take a little bit of time and make sure that there was clarity around the concerns and probably one side of the perspective as to why the committee decided to include the language to benefit all of our students. So thank you, board members, for indulging me. I know that this is not, you know, what you guys want to talk about, but I just felt the need to share that.
Well,
you've got a comment.
I just wanted to say that one thing I want to remind Ms. Minnis, about 3 years ago, this was the 3-2 was not unusual. The board did the same thing, and it was always the same base. One of the same basic issues was that the and I thought this was what you all might talk about, that the code of student conduct came to public hearing too late for it to be a real public hearing, and that was the thing I didn't realize till that night when. Board member Frost started to say something. He said, you know, we can't do it now because we have to re-advertise. That about 3 years ago, when we went from just code of student conduct to this long, positive climate, discipline, da 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 da, it came up around issues where there was some pushback, because I was involved in that, surprise, surprise, around some of the issues, and the board knew that there were problems and then went on and voted on it that night because, again, they had not sufficient time to resolve them. So I just, for me, one of the biggest things that came out. So that did happen. It was a pretty simple.
So I do want to respond to that, too, because I have served on other legislative boards, whether it's planning or zoning. There was a public hearing that evening. The board can decide to either take the suggestion or not. The fact of advertising or not. So the reality of that was there was a 3-2 vote to move forward as is. That's the reality of that. It wasn't that it's too late, because it was not too late. That was just the way the vote came. And I do not want to put words in my foot, you know, but my understanding was one of the issues, and there was plenty of workshops to discuss issues that the public would have and input. So it wasn't a drop-dead date. There are always public workshops. Because I didn't interrupt you. How a vote turns out is how a vote turns out. But my understanding that evening, and I don't want to open a can of worms, but my understanding, which I was understood Mr. Frost but didn't support, was he wanted, because when you start listing, and that was something I said, when you, as you read that list, you said HIV, but what about herpes? What about this? As you list groups, you inevitably forget them. And if I recall from our meeting, your part of your proposal was to change it, to remove those protected groups, because everyone should be treated fairly. Did I misinterpret your...
No, in fact, I didn't really want to go too much down this, but since it's open,
yeah, I mean, it was under your matter, but
right.
You didn't bring it up.
Right,
so.
Okay. So what it was is there were parenthetical statements, as Ms. Amanda said, that outline, you know, transgender, gender identification, gay, straight, or no, straight's not protected, but other protected classes that if they're already listed. There's a legal definition of protected classes. And that's my understanding, and when case law is settled, then those become protected classes. And oftentimes, those are things of which a person cannot help. So, for that reason, I felt cut it out. Also, along the same with disease. If there's disease, we don't need to list every disease. We simply just, you know, to my mind, that is more inclusive. And specifically, coming back to, and I'll go point by point, So we already have an anti-bullying policy, so having it specific to attire isn't necessary. That's already handled. And if we have number two, I believe you misinterpreted me. I actually support everything that you said as far as the plan. I believe what it was is it was a specific type of bullying or bullying of a specific group or something along those lines, which all children are, you know, the sentence before it was all students and all employees. And to reiterate your point, we already have that in policy. So we don't need a separate, you know, we don't need to spell out every specific instance in which this applies. To my mind, if we have a rule for rectangles or if we have a policy for rectangles, we don't need a policy for rhombus, for parallelograms, for squares, for every type. If we are a district that truly believes every student, and we take the inclusive approach and say, we're not going to discriminate based on disease, whether that disease is sickle cell, whether that disease is HIV, whether that disease is cancer, then we've, as a governing board, we have an anti-discrimination policy that is inclusive. So, to my mind, it wasn't about targeting or for removal of anything. In fact, it was about creating a bigger tent and just saying, listen, we don't believe in bullying. We're not going to tolerate bullying of any student, whether that student is straight, gay, black, white, Hispanic, whatever. You're a student, and you know all children of God. And I know that that's going to grate you wrong, but
please don't speak for me or assume that you know my definition of God, because
okay.
Your definition of God may be different from mine. I do not judge yours, so please be respectful of mine.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
And Ms. Simonis, I just want to say also, too, when you say, I know you don't want to hear about this, the board, in the same sense,
well,
you've done that, too.
Well, the board can call me on it, and I'm happy to be mindful and change that. But when it comes to this issue of religion, it has happened before. And I find it to be disrespectful. There's no need to throw in those barbs. We're having a conversation. That doesn't contribute to it.
Well,
and it makes me feel uncomfortable.
And I respect that, and I'm sure
Thank
if you heard you. But like I said, I didn't call you, and I should have. Because
should've.
At Pelican Island, you said, I know you don't feel like this board about pursuing, you know, the multicultural, which was untrue for me.
Okay.
And then today when you said, I know this board doesn't want to hear about it,
okay.
That was untrue for me. I can't speak
and
for
I
that.
I apologize.
So
I will.
I think we've got a clean slate, as families
okay.
like to, I think
right.
healthy families like to do. And so I appreciate that. Mr. Searcy.
One of the things that... real business thing that we didn't discuss that I remember was the attendance policy, and right now it's quite open as far as I'm concerned. And I, in the past, have thought that was okay. If you could pass the test, that's okay. But we need to go back to a certain number of days that a student can miss before they fail the course. And I don't remember all the details. Maybe one of the others up here might. But you know, we're trying to teach the students some responsibility, and if we just let them go wherever they want to go and show up to take the test and pass it, I think we've failed.
So
hopefully we can address that with the teacher's support.
Sure. The previous policy that was in place several years ago and is still in place in several districts around the state is 9 unexcused absences per semester if you have at the secondary level. You have more than 9 unexcused absences per semester, you automatically fail the course. There are always appeals procedures put in place. You know, if someone has more than 9 unexcused absences and there's actually a good reason for that, I'm not sure what that would be, but you can file an appeal, and the appeals are heard at the school level and that kind of thing. So this policy was in place for several years here in the past, and you know, many people believe it was effective. Now, both high schools have actually, we're going to talk about this at a future meeting, both high schools have come up with some attendance incentive procedures for this year. When I say incentives, there are some consequences for non-attendance. So you can't participate in certain after-school activities if you have a certain number of unexcused absences and that kind of thing. So both of the high schools have actually already crafted policies for this coming year that they want to pilot. So I was going to share that with you guys at a future meeting. But we had discussed with the high school principals earlier this past school year, about returning to the failure due to absence policy, the 9 absences, and we weren't really sure that was going to be that effective, so instead we crafted this policy that I can share with you at the next meeting about you can't participate in some of these activities if you have excessive absences. You know, and that seems to be something that might motivate the kids more than you get these many absences, you're automatically going to fail. A lot of times that has the unintended consequence of once the student reaches their 10th absence, they say, well, I'm not going to come back to class because I've already failed. So we're looking at a different plan right now that I'll share with you guys at the next meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Menace. Or Mr. McCain. Mr. Frost.
Yeah, and I just wanted to come back to one item that I didn't get a chance to discuss, and that was the gang issue or gang affiliation or things like that. I'm very comfortable working with Dr. Warrior on whatever definition it is. You know, next time we workshop this and then send it to committee and do all those other things to potentially define it as, you know, justice-involved individuals as being, you know, the requirement or whatever. The experts, whether it's the sheriffs and, you know, the community, defined as a better definition of what it means to be affiliated with a gang.
And now I want to say that we have a large chunk of this meeting just focused on the superintendent's goals and also the document. Unless, Mr. Searcy, do you have one more thing you want to?
I do have one more.
Yeah, sure.
The young lady was concerned about the 3-2 votes. You got 5 individuals.
What do you mean?
Sorry.
Ms. Warrior.
Oh, Ms. Warren, I'm trying to understand who you're talking about. Which one is that? Oh, Dr. Warren. Thank you. I just get confused sometimes. I'm sorry.
I don't know what I was going to say now, but anyway, I'm sorry I was interrupted. But there are 5 individual board members up here. 5 of us have our own opinions about how we're going to vote. And in the past, boards have been criticized because it was always whatever the leader says, everybody raise your hand. And I don't care what anybody says. I'm going to vote the way I think, I feel about what the issue is. I'm not going to be, Chairman, you said don't vote. That's
sure.
Not going to happen. And it shouldn't happen. This is a democracy, and we need to handle it that way.
That's right.
Oh, I was just saying that this is not the first time that it happened. And it happened around that thing of, we've got to get this in. And it always turns to the lawyer. Now we have to re-advertise what we needed out by the time school starts, and we back it out. And although the reality of a manager is that you can do it, nobody ever wants to do it because it's backed out.
But whether it's the school board, and my point was whether it's the school board or the city council, the county commissioners, when you have a public hearing, it's a public hearing, then you bang it closed and you vote on it. So I just want to make sure that the public knew that there was clear opportunities beforehand, whether board members or the public chose to put input then or that day, that it wasn't just closed at that, like that was the first time it came up and down, you know, it was raised up the flagpole. There was steps along the way, too.
This is where the public comes, because not everybody sits through these like I do.
No, but I'm saying we are inclusive to have more than one shot. Some you will have. We just spoke about this previously, that this board had a previous item, and we even though we took something off, we let the public vent. Before I was on this board and others here, this board, this landscape, chose to not let you sit there and not put in. So, as I said before, progress, not perfection. We are working on doing it, and ultimately whether the vote ends up that way. But, you know, as I said, I just want to make clear that the public knew that there were other opportunities. You're going to get the same core couple of people interchanging, but whether it's here or a city council, there are people that are involved in government, just like there's only so many people, sadly, who vote. Mm-hmm. Out of 130,000 people in this county, maybe one-third will vote and control what happens in legislators. So that's the reality. You're right. Not everybody does that. And I don't care how many websites we put it on and how many newspaper articles. There is just that, whether it's that, just that many people that are going to be involved. You know, so I think you understand that, and I applaud you for being one of those people that come to the table, because I appreciate
it. I'm not going to agree too focused. I'm always hoping that it will be in my favor one day.
Mr. Jimenez, and then we have to go on to goals.
And I want to thank you for calling me on that, and actually, when I recall that meeting, I remember that I was the one that brought up all of the deficiencies and got the conversation going, but the difference is that was not a specific language issue per se. That was timeliness, and that was people taking a look at it from the dais and saying, oh, wow, maybe we should look at this carefully. And yes, I forgot. Yeah, it was a 3-2 vote. I think this was a little different because we were looking at specific language, and we actually, as a result of that experience, did make sure we opened up the process because we were in violation of our policy, and we did do it in a timely manner. And my concern was that we sat through discussion and these issues were never brought up, and I'm sure they probably just came up to you, you know, right before the meeting, and it's never too late. You know, sometimes you sit there and something pops into your head, so that's totally permissible. But it's interesting that when we had a meeting February 9th, and we did exactly in our policy what we're doing in our school board conduct, somehow then it wasn't controversial and all policies were voted on, and all of a sudden it's controversial when it's already policy. And so that was a little disconcerting at the time of the meeting because we had so much time and opportunity to actually have a conversation and not be put on the spot. So, you know, there's a little difference because then it was just the whole document. Now it was just particular issues that we could have discussed when we had our workshops. But again, this may have come up after the workshops, and I understand Mr. Frost's due diligence in trying to bring them forward.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'd like to move on now and give this to Dr. Rendell because we have a big chunk of to go over this goals. We have a timeline, and obviously this is a tool not only to move the district forward, but also something that we evaluate the superintendent on and is in his contract. So, Dr. Rendell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Simchick is passing down the line a copy of my goals for 2016-17. In the package you had on at your place, third or fourth sheet in, I think in the stapled packet provided by Ms. Stang, there's a copy of the current 2015-16 school superintendent goals. So, and for board members, the packet that you have that looks like this. This is the current year goals. And then 16-17 is the one that has highlight in different places. There are copies of this one up here by Ms. Stang from any members of the audience. So I used the same format that we used last year. I believe the same 5 focus areas are appropriate. Same goal areas in all 5 focus areas. I think a lot of the areas were 100% on target as areas that we wanted to focus on, so we've kept them all the same. The changes are what is highlighted in yellow. So if we start with focus area 1, student achievement, which should be our number one focus at all times, increase achievement scores. Goal 1 is increase achievement scores in all standardized assessments. The first bullet is the same as last year. Improve classroom instruction with a focus on collaborative planning, standards-based instruction, and formative assessment. To me, that is the linchpin of all of it. It's teachers working together, designing and delivering lessons based on the standards, and checking student progress on a regular basis to see if they're being effective at their classroom instruction. The next 2 bullets are new. Implement progress monitoring checks and analyze data quarterly to inform instruction. And one of the things that I noticed this current year was we didn't have district-wide a good progress monitoring system. not sure if we've talked about this, but about a third of the way through the year, I wanted to know how our schools were doing, how our students were performing, and we didn't have a set of district benchmark data available yet at that time. We were just administering the first round of district benchmark assessments at that time, and now it's a little bit late in the year to be getting data to see how our students were progressing. So this year we're going to have the progress monitoring is going to end about the first round of progress monitoring will be the end of first quarter. So we'll have that data in October, and then the second round of progress monitoring will be December, January, so we'll have that data mid-year. The idea is that we can check student progress on a more frequent basis and make sure that we're making the strides that we're hoping to. Ms. Menes.
I do have a question. When you say implement progress monitoring checks, are you talking about more testing in addition to the benchmarks? Are we going to see a change?
The same amount of testing. We're moving it up earlier in the calendar.
Okay.
And then we're going to have actual data analysis meetings with the principals to review their data. This is something that has been done here in a couple of years. So, no, not. There is the next bullet is additional testing. So, moving to the next bullet, incorporate national and international assessments as measures of progress. We are going to be administering the ACT to all of our juniors this year. The juniors have a really light testing load. When we talked about the testing calendar last year and we looked at the percentage of time students were spent testing, the juniors don't have any state standardized assessments anymore. They were going to have American History before, and that was removed. American History EOC, that was removed. So we don't have that for the juniors, so there's no state standardized assessment for juniors. By providing all of our juniors with the ACT, that's going to give every student a college entrance exam score automatically. Far too often we come across students who are getting ready to apply for college or hoping to go to college on an athletic scholarship, and we find out they don't have a qualifying score. Mm-hmm. They haven't taken the ACT yet. And by the time they take it, spring semester of their senior year, they only have one shot. And if they don't get a high enough score, they can't qualify. So by having all juniors take the ACT this fall, we'll have those qualifying scores for them to go to college. And if it's not high enough that time, we will know that so we can get them some instruction to help them improve and take the ACT again later in spring of junior year or senior year. The last thing is a lot of our students end up meeting their FSA and FCAT graduation requirements by a concordance score on the ACT, but that's only for kids who have taken an ACT. So again, by having every junior take the ACT, we are going to have data that could help them meet their graduation requirements if they have not passed the Algebra 1 EOC. That's usually the concordance score that the ACT. We have more kids who have failed the Algebra 1 EOC earn that concordance score with the ACT than by retaking the Algebra 1 EOC. So by providing that to all of our students as juniors, we will have that. One of the other things is, philosophically, I'm not so sure that the state standardized assessments are the best way to measure our progress, the best way to measure our students' academic achievement. By putting a stake in the ground, so to speak, and saying we're going to use the ACT, every one of our juniors is going to take the ACT, we're giving ourselves the opportunity to measure our students against a national standard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another way to say, how are our students doing? There are several other districts in the state and around the country that already do this. We do give every sophomore the opportunity to take the PSAT. That's state-sponsored. We don't pay for that. But this we are paying for. And it's actually a negligible cost. It's less than $50,000. That's why you haven't seen it on the board agenda item.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that in the budget?
Yes, sir.
And how much is the FSA? How much does that cost the state?
A lot more than the ACT.
Yeah.
And
it's a national that the college takes. And
yes, sir.
Gold standard.
People try, right?
Yeah. Some people try, but we'll see.
I will tell you that the bullet also says incorporate national and international assessments as measures of progress. I haven't decided to pull the trigger or not. I'll come back with you with some more discussion about it. But there is a test that we can take that's correlated to the PISA assessment.
Mm-hmm.
The PISA assessment is the one that's that international test that American schools are usually criticized for our students not performing well on. And there's a test you can take that is aligned to the PISA. And it's what they do is if you contract with NWA that administers the test, they pull a random sample of your sophomores. And it's only a handful. It's like 40 to 60 kids. at an individual high school that take the test, and then they match those results. They compare them to the PISA results, and you see how you're measuring against international standards. Not sure if I'm going to do that or not, but again, going back to my philosophical thought that I'm not sure that the FSA is the best way to measure our students' academic achievement. By having a national standard with the ACT, if we want to take and see how are we comparing internationally, then the PISA assessment would be the way to go. But I'll let you know about that before we do it.
I do want to say, first of all, I'm thankful. I'm tickled that you're doing that with the ACT. I know that in the past it's been the SAT, I believe, that we've had.
We still do the PSAT for sophomores.
Sophomores. But the ACT is usually at a cost, unless you have free or reduced lunch.
Right.
You can take up to two ACTs. The SAT, I've been told, was created by the Blue Bloods years ago when everybody went to college, and the ACT was the more universal. And in fact, ACT has become so competitive that the SAT changed their test this year because they were losing a lot of people to the ACT. Will this be given during school hours? And because I know there's a September ACT and a December ACT. Is this
correct
in October or November and during school?
Correct. Good question. It's very similar to our sophomore admission of the PSAT, which is on a certain day in October. Nationwide, all the sophomores take the PSAT. So ACT has picked a date in October that any juniors who are doing this school-wide assessment, all juniors that are taking ACT will take it that day. During that time, it's paper pencil, so they'll only be out of class for a couple hours, and we'll be done.
Then I also want to, so that they can be used with the NCAA,
yes, ma'am,
as well as the thing, will the students be aware of what codes to put on those tests to make sure that they get credit for
it's
that?
A regular ACT assessment.
Awesome.
All of the
I mean, who's going to register that? The guidance counselor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. That is very good news for this district, I have to say. Ms. Jimenez.
Thank you. I just have a question. When we look at these student achievement goals, I know you haven't gotten to goal three yet, but looking at goal one and goal three, I guess my question is, given that we are struggling with our academic achievement for our Black students and we are dealing with DSEG and trying to move toward unitary status, I just wonder if it wouldn't make sense to be very explicit in terms of a goal. I don't think that it would be favoritism. I think that our reality is that our African-American students are struggling. Now that we do have results for the FSA, such as it is, and are where we are now, it would be wonderful to have a baseline in your measurable outcomes for our African-American students, and then in moving forward.
Right.
Just being explicit, I know that we do that when we do the data breakdown, but I think just because of the urgency that it would be good, and that's just my wondering. I mean, I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, it is reflected in the second bullet under Goal 3 in measurable outcomes, increase in minority subgroup graduation rate by 5 percentage points. So that's
okay.
One area where I've specifically targeted all minority subgroups.
Okay.
We can move it up. Something similar in goal one.
Right, because this is just moonshot, and we're also doing so poorly in math.
So goal one is all state assessments. Goal two is moonshot, and then goal three is graduation rate.
Okay.
Mr. Searcy.
Take the ACT in October. When do you get the scores back?
6 weeks.
It's very, very shortly. Yeah.
Before the end of the semester.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And that's online?
No, they take a paper pencil.
Paper pencil.
Yep.
And then they return an actual paper that will show the composite scores of each one,
yep,
and then the total composite.
Yeah, it's something that's going to be very, very beneficial to our students.
Yes.
It's the right thing to do. So staying with goal one, the last strategy to increase achievement is to implement a tiered model of support for individual schools. This is something that the new Assistant Superintendent for Curriculum and Instruction, Mrs. Dampier, has already put in place. She's taken a look at the schools who have scored poorly on the FCAT, on the FSA assessment this past year, and directing additional resources to those schools. And I may have her come and do a presentation at some point about the tiered model. Then the measurable outcomes for goal one, improvement of at least one letter grade for each school in the state accountability model. We didn't achieve that this past year. Meet or exceed state average in all standardized assessments. We actually did exceed the state average in several of the standardized assessments, but not all. The new one is to set baseline scores on national and international assessments. So this year we'll get, with the ACT, we'll get our own kind of baseline for our district, how well we perform. And then if we do take the international assessment, we'll get a baseline to measure in the future. And the idea would be to start looking at this as a 3 to 5 year trend analysis to see how we do over the course of the years. So moving quickly to goal two, maintain support and focus on the moonshot moment. The first two bullets are the same. Continue partnership with Learning Alliance and other community support organizations. And evaluate the effectiveness of initiatives and strategies and monitor progress towards the 2018 target. The yellow highlight there is use cohort analysis, something we started doing this year. Most of the work that I've seen in analyzing or evaluating the effectiveness of some of the strategies towards third grade reading proficiency is our first grader scored this last year, our first grader scored this year. They're not the same first graders.
Right.
We need to do more cohort analysis. And what we're actually seeing is if you follow the cohorts, that the cohorts that have in kindergarten or first grade or second grade have participated in a Moonshot Moment sponsored strategy, after school Moonshot Academy or a summer program, and if you follow them into second grade or third grade, you see that we actually do have a lot of improvement. So the idea is to start by doing cohort analysis, we'll see who took what additional, who benefited from what additional in instructional initiative or strategy, how well did it improve their academic achievement. We can better target by 2018. In other words, by looking at last year's cohorts this year and their progress, we'll know what things to use for 2017-18 to make sure we can get the best improvement in those cohort groups. The third bullet under goal two is new work with community agencies to bolster participation in and rigor of pre-kindergarten learning programs. There's a fabulous group of people working in this area already in the county, the Kindergarten Readiness Collaborative. We're trying to strengthen our partnership with them to make sure they see us as a partner in the work that they're doing, and we can try to figure out ways to help them improve not only the access to more pre-K, but the rigor of the pre-K that's in place. And you'll be hearing about some of those initiatives later. Develop a plan for the replacement of the SAT-10 is still a bullet. It was last year. SAT-10 originally was supposed to expire at the end of this year. Word out by the state is that they might extend the use of the SAT-10. So that's up in the air, so I didn't take it off because we're not sure yet. The state was supposed to identify what their possible replacement was. Since they couldn't identify what the possible replacement was, that's why they extended the use of the SAT-10. The goals, that the measurable outcomes that go with goal two, increase the number of students reading at grade level by 5%. Based on the FSA, we did not meet that. We're still analyzing data on the SAT-10, so I have to see about SAT-10. But the cohort analysis, I think, is going to be very valuable to see how different cohorts of students improve on different areas, or in reading proficiency based on what strategies they participated in. All right, so moving back up to goal three, increased graduation rate. The first and third bullets are the same, the early warning systems and the focus plan for individual subgroups. The second bullet is new. We want to try to increase the number of career and technical programs and the rigor of the programs in those schools. I believe Dr. Arnett talked to you guys about the fact that we have some career and technical programs that haven't led to certification. All of our career and technical programs will lead to certification. Kids who are in those programs will take certification tests at the end of their sequence. So hopefully they will have certificates that can lead them to employment. And then that fourth bullet is something we're actually already doing. Members of the Gifford Youth Achievement Center met with us a couple months ago to start talking about African-American achievement or African-American graduation rates. And we took that and formed a subgroup, a working group, a committee that's working on a graduation checklist. This is something that we would start tracking kids from the minute they enter our classrooms as either a pre-K or kindergarten student. And we set up a graduation checklist to see how they're doing all the way through, not waiting till their senior year. So by third grade, what benchmark should they have accomplished? By fourth grade, what benchmark should they have accomplished? And those kind of things. So we're working on a graduation checklist right now. But that way we're not waiting till high school to see if the kids are in danger of not graduating. If we identify some things early on that they're missing or lacking, we can hopefully address it early on and get them ready and back on track. So that's all for student achievement. For focus area two, safety and security. Goal one, ensure the physical safety and security of all students and staff. the first bullet remains, conduct physical plant inspections to make sure that, you know, we're obviously checking to make sure that we have it, if there are any safety concerns, that they're addressed. One thing that came out of that last, one of those last board meetings where we looked at the safety report, we didn't have a good policy or protocol in place to monitor how soon safety violations were fixed. So I've already tasked Mr. Morrison and his departments with coming up with a protocol for us to monitor how quickly those physical safety violations are repaired or fixed. The third bullet remains the same, reduce facility security measures at each school and upgrade as necessary cameras, fencing. We're doing a single point of entry at most of our elementary schools, so there's only one way to get in and out of the building. That, you know, requires some capital investment. We're doing that. So the measurable outcomes at the bottom, the school safety reports is still the first one, but the second one is the records of that protocol. Once we establish that protocol to see how quickly these safety violations are corrected, you can see, you know, make sure that we can check them off and make sure they're done. It's not a question of, well, we had a safety violation noted back in January. Do we know if it's fixed or not? Hopefully we'll know by having that new protocol. Goal two, it says ensure all students are safe, are in a safe and secure learning environment. This is not so much physical safety as it is mental and emotional safety. So the first one, review all bullying harassment policies and training modules. We have to do that anyway. So we kept that. Review and adjust the code of conduct and administration of student discipline practices and procedures. We already reviewed the code of conduct. We talked about it a little bit already. One of the things that we haven't done as well in the past is review these student discipline practices and procedures. So we'll be monitoring how we're implementing the consequences associated with student misbehavior. We have tracked numbers a little bit this year. The number of suspensions have reduced and that kind of thing, but we still haven't done an in-depth analysis on a regular basis of what's leading to the different suspensions and levels and that kind of thing. So we're going to do a little deeper dig with that. The third bullet is new, and it isn't at the same time. Implement positive behavior support programs at all schools. All of our schools should have some kind of positive behavior support program, either conscious discipline, Kids at Hope, or a fully functioning PBIS program. Not all of our schools have that. So all of our schools will have that by the end of the year. If we don't, we will. The measurables down in goal two, decrease the number of discipline referrals and suspensions by 5%. I kept it at 5. We didn't get to 5 this year. If you remember from the when I did the progress check a month or so ago, we weren't at 5. So we keep it at 5. But we didn't reduce by 5%. I think it was 3.4. So we got to keep that as 5 and shoot for that for this year. The records of the positive behavior support programs at each school, making sure that we do have these programs in place at each school. Going back up to goal 3, ensure effectiveness of emergency response measures. Kept all three of those the same. We need to conduct all of our drills. We need to review our procedures all the time and conduct at least one district-wide emergency response drill. If you remember, we did not conduct a drill this year because we had several district-wide emergencies that we responded to. So, but we have a drill ready, you know, planned and ready to implement. We just didn't do it.
Yeah, but reality worked better than the drill.
Reality did work better than the drill several times. So, yes, sir.
Question on the goal two, measurable outcome, decrease the number of discipline referrals, suspension about 5%. Are we taking into account the times that a teacher will remove a student from her class and they do the roundabout and come up back in? Is that considered a referral or?
So
some of the reports that I saw, the numbers at certain schools decreased, and the word on the street was the principal was saying, "Don't send anybody else.
Correct.
You take care of it."
Right. So there's two answers to that. One is the 5% number can only be measured by the reported in school and out of school suspensions. So if you go back up to the second bullet in goal two, the last part of that statement says, and the administration of student discipline practices and procedures. So we're going to be watching to see what we're doing with these different consequences, how they're coded in focus, as whether they're resulting in school suspensions, out-of-school suspensions, or timeouts, or removals, and that kind of thing. So we're going to be monitoring that. Yep. All right, so we go to focus area 3, employee development. The first one, provide a unified, comprehensive professional development plan. This is a little bit different. The first bullet is changed to implement new delivery model professional development with a menu-driven format. We may have talked about this a little bit in a previous meeting. We're moving away from the earful plan where we have a district-wide four times a year, a long 2 days of professional development focused on system-wide initiatives or changes. Instead, we're going to more of a menu-driven format where we surveyed the teachers and asked them what kind of professional development do they feel that they need, and we've then responded and crafted some of those professional development modules. We're also taking a look at some of our district-wide needs, such as diversity training for our teachers and that kind of thing. So we're going to have more of a menu format for PD, where teachers are going to be able to choose certain professional developments to attend. Others are going to have to attend and be mandatory and that kind of thing. But it's a different, totally different model. It's kind of going back to what we did several years ago when we had district professional development days sprinkled throughout the year, and the teachers were allowed to choose from those different PD offerings. The second and third bullet remain the same: conduct mid-year assessment of effective delivered professional development. The third bullet, mitigate the impact to instructional time, I felt was very important. That was one of the reasons I decided to do away with the earful model that had been in place, because we took teachers and other staff out of the classroom and out of the building far too often to deliver professional development. So we have to come up with different ways to do it. The measurable outcomes down there, goal one, the analysis of teacher instructional practice scores. I think I showed those to you. The IP scores are what the evaluator rates them, the effectiveness levels. So in this one, it's the areas that are rated. So if we're focusing on PD for different types of teaching strategies, do we see those types of teaching strategies recorded in the areas of rating on the IP scores? The professional development counter will be a measurable outcome of the menu-driven PD format. And then we'll continue to take a look at the PD feedback forms. Similar to Mr. Searcy's evaluator survey, we do ask people who take PD to fill out a survey about the PD, whether it's effective or not. Going to goal two, implement employee performance systems focused in improvement. The first bullet is new, install principal training program based on national standards and comprehensive research base. We are going to have all of our principals go through a national principal training module program. It's from the University of Washington's Center for Educational Leadership. It's a nationally recognized model called the Four Dimensions of Instructional Leadership. It's actually what's used by the state of Florida for the Commissioner's Leadership Academy for our principals that have participated in that. We haven't had a research-based principal training program in place for several years. We had a thing called EarPlan, which was really for teachers or other or assistant principals that wanted to go into administration, that kind of thing. This is all of our principals will participate in the Four Dimensions of Instructional Leadership this year. Some of our people will be trained as trainers, and then we'll be able to deliver the training to all of our assistant principals next year. It'll become our principal certification training. So this is something that we're trying to raise the level of performance of the principals in our district. This is a nationally recognized program. It's been around for several years, and I expect it'll be very beneficial for us. The next three bullets are the same. We want to train the instructional staff, the instructional and school leadership staff on the proper use of the evaluation protocol. That's Marzano. Continue to train non-instructional staff and supervise the proper use of the evaluation protocol. That's our various non-instructional tools that we use. Administrators have a certain leadership performance appraisal. CWA employees have a certain performance appraisal. We need to make sure people are using this properly. The last one's mid-year assessment of evaluation results and improvement plans. It's the same as this year. We did that this year. So the measurable goals down at the bottom, the analysis of the teacher instructional practice scores, goal two. Analysis of the teacher instructional practice scores, the level of performance. So now we're looking at how well they score. Are they being scored at highly effective, needs improvement? Or on the Marzano framework, is it, are they innovating, applying, developing, and so on? The analysis of non-instructional performance review scores. This is something that will be new. I don't think we've done a good job of taking a look at like CWA evaluations, other non-instructional evaluations. We've had a couple of situations where someone's come up to speak to you at a board meeting and said, I've been non-renewed, but I had an overall highly effective evaluation. So I want to know why that's happening. So that's why that's on there. It's a bullet. So I'll be checking into that. Mm-hmm. The third bullet is a review of principal performance scores. If we're going to train all of our principals in this national model, I expect to see that their ratings as principals will increase from this current year to at the end of next year and then so on. So, yes.
In the area of evaluation, this year did we have any problems with the timeline? I know in the past sometimes there have been complaints about the timeline not being complied with. Have we improved in that area?
Yeah, it's my understanding that we've improved greatly in that area. There were some principals that had to call and ask for extensions, and it was either because something happened on the day they were supposed to go observe a teacher, either crisis prevented them from going to do the classroom observation, or the teacher was sick or something like that. So we grant those timelines usually, but it's my understanding that overall we were much improved in getting in our evaluations on time. All right, so moving to goal three, create employment conditions that affect, attract, and retain high-quality employees. It's always going to be a strategy to establish competitive salary schedules and compensation levels. Not going to take that off there. It's always going to be there. We are constrained a little bit with the budget this year, but it's still going to be a strategy or goal. Mitigate increases in health care and other benefit costs. That'll be a strategy and a goal. It'll be tough to accomplish this year. Continue to refocus efforts towards recruitment efforts towards critical need areas, certification and ethnicity. You've heard a little bit talk about that today. The last bullet is new. It says implement a tool to gather concrete information regarding existing employees. So that's a work in progress. That's a strategy. That's something I want to see by the end of the year, is that we have some kind of concrete tool to gather information from employees who are leaving us. Right now we have an online survey. When they leave us, they're given an email that says, hey, please go on and fill out this survey. Not a lot of our exiting employees fill out that survey. Exit interviews would be better. So we're going to take a look at some different models and see what we can use, but we need to have some kind of information to find out why people are leaving. So the goals for goal three, the measurable outcomes are employee hire and retention rates, analysis of the recruitment efforts, and exit information. So if we get a good concrete tool in place to get some exit information, then we can analyze it. Focus area four is school-community relations. Goal one, increase communication between schools and community. All three of these bullets are new. One of them is just kind of a revision of the last year's bullet. But seek community input on district-wide issues such as school calendar and school start times. We talked a little bit last year. We were thinking about maybe making changes to the school start times, as in the time of day that we start school. We didn't really engage the community in that, so we pulled back and said we would look at that in the future. So we actually already have some data ready for that, for some town hall meetings that will engage the community in the fall. So we'll start talking about that. The school calendar, a draft of the 17-18 school calendar is actually already ready by the calendar committee. One of the things they'd like to do is put it on the website for public input before they bring it to the board. So we're going to do that. We just haven't posted it yet because we feel like if we post it now, people will think it's this year's calendar. So we're waiting until the school year starts, and then we'll post it. But the idea was that we could have the 17-18 calendar approved very quickly in the fall once we get underway. But we want community input on that. We want to continue to review and improve the school report card and district report card. It's a way to communicate with the community how our schools are performing. And we want to increase our use of social media as a communication tool. We had that actually as a goal last year, and we've definitely increased the use of our Twitter feed. Our web page has gotten a lot more hits or traffic. But in case you haven't heard, we just launched a Facebook page.
Yes.
So we're on Facebook if you don't know that. Find us and friend us on Facebook or however that goes. But the measurable outcomes down at the bottom are records of town hall meetings and community committees, new and improved versions of the school and district report cards, and then analytics on the Facebook page and other social media tools that we use. Goal two, maintain and improve working relationship with the community. First bullet, continue to examine and assess the possibility of achieving unitary status and determine possible next steps. As we discussed today, after the board's had a chance to sit down with Mr. Borkowski and review the report, the board can determine its next steps towards the possibility of achieving unitary status. And so that will be one way to measure how we're doing with the community. Second bullet, continue partnerships with organizations, United Way, American Cancer Society, and others, and seek new partnerships to benefit schools. I've said several times before, I don't know if I've ever been in a community that supports its schools as much as this community. So we want to make sure that we do our part as partners with these organizations and continue to foster that relationship. Third bullet is to continue the Casual for a Cause campaign with additional organizations. I really think the Casual for a Cause campaign was very successful this year. two goals of it I think were both accomplished. Number one, we did raise money for some more of the organizations, but the better goal, I think, is actually that we raised awareness in our students and staff and the community about what these organizations do. So we will honor, so to speak, or highlight some of the same organizations this year, but we're going to swap out some of them and do some new ones. So we'll get you a list before we start doing that in September. So the measurables for goal two, next steps associated with move toward unitary status, and then the donations generated from the Casual for Cause campaign, because we can measure that. And we did average about $5,000 a month last year.
That's great.
So the third goal, improved relationship with charter schools. I actually feel like we've accomplished this, but I wanted to keep it as a goal because if I took it off, people might say, oh, well, now you don't care anymore. So the first bullet, develop consistent communication pattern with charter schools. Is I know we have accomplished that, but we'll still use that as a strategy. Mr. Green has done a great job. We actually meet, the charter schools meet monthly. Tomorrow morning is the meeting for this month. The second bullet is in yellow because it's actually for me. Meet regularly with charter school leaders, school-based, and boards. I actually have some meetings set up for this coming year with the different boards that work with those schools. I hadn't met with any of those boards this year, and I felt like it would be important for me to start establishing a working relationship with them, not just their school-based leadership, but also their boards. So I'm going to be doing that. The third bullet we already do include charter school staff and meetings and trainings at the district office. We've actually had quite a bit more participation by the charter schools in a lot of our different initiatives this year than we had in the past. And so those are the measurables at the bottom, records of the monthly charter school meetings, and increased participation by charter schools in district-wide activities. The last area, focus area five, is technology integration. The first, to increase the use of technology as an instructional tool in the classroom. First two bullets are the same. Increase the number and use of digital assessments. They provide real-time feedback to teachers if we can get them to use digital assessments. Second bullet, provide on-site support to teachers who are utilizing technology as an instructional tool in the classroom. This is one thing that I've seen our district do better than other districts. A lot of other districts hand out technology, either to students or teachers, but then don't support the use of that technology. Mr. Green and his department saw the necessity or the value of providing technical support in the classrooms, in the buildings, so that teachers and students, when they use the technology, they have the support. That third bullet, I'm sure you're aware of, is to implement a digital instruction initiative based on curriculum. We're doing this fifth grade science digital initiative, so that's going to be a strategy to increase the use of technology as an instructional tool. And if you jump down to the measurable outcomes, there's the analysis of fifth grade science digital instruction initiative. That will actually be, we'll do some analytics, like how much the devices are used, because we can actually monitor that. But also the biggest impact will be on our fifth grade science scores. If the fifth grade science scores increase, then we'll know that we've done what we intended to do. The fourth bullet under the strategies, explore the costs and benefits of a true one-to-one. I left that on there because we still are working on that. Mr. Green and I continue to look at this on an ongoing basis. The fifth grade digital initiative in science is not a take-home. We are not giving students devices to take home. We are using them in the classroom, the laptop parts, sets of parts in each class. Theoretically, if every fifth grade class has a laptop part, theoretically every kid could take that laptop home. In other words, it's the same amount of devices. We're just not sure that a take-home initiative yields the results that the cost that it incurs. Yes?
Are we looking to use Chromebooks, or are we just sticking with regular?
So the idea of using a regular laptop is it can be used for testing. Okay. A Chromebook would not support testing. So, all right. So goal number two is a good question. Increase the use of technology to serve as a curriculum management system. So this is kind of like the teacher's use of technology and then us at the back end using technology. We did increase the use of Canvas this year. We showed you some analytics at the end of the year that showed a much higher increase in the use of Canvas. The second bullet is new. We want to examine the possible use of Indian River Virtual to supplement and or replace current credit recovery programs. A lot of the credit recovery programs we have are not effective. Kids are sitting in the classroom on a credit recovery program for a period of time and they're not progressing in the class. So IR Virtual, in the model that we've put in place with IR Virtual, they could have access to a live instructor, which they don't with the current credit recovery programs. A live instructor that's teaching the course. So we're going to look at IR Virtual as maybe either a supplement or a replacement to credit recovery. The third bullet, launched the creation of a web-based lesson plan bank. We are asking teachers to design their lessons in a digital format so we can create a bank of lesson plans so that If, say you're a new teacher and you come to work for the district and you're, you want some help trying to design a lesson, but it's 10 o'clock at night and you don't want to call your buddy, well, you can get online and look at a lesson plan that's been developed by your buddy, and you can use it in your classroom, that kind of thing. This would be a great resource for all of our teachers to have a bank of lesson plans that they could access anytime, 24/7. So the goal, the measurable outcomes for those is the utilization numbers and cost-benefit analysis of the IR virtual versus current credit recovery, and the creation and use of the digital lesson plan bank. The last area, goal three, increase use of technology as a student management system. I really just changed the wording on the first two bullets from implement, because focus was new to us last year, to improve the effectiveness of the focus integrated student system information, student information system and gradebook, and increase the effectiveness of the parent portal and the communication with parents via focus. Continue to maximize the resources available from Performance Matters. We've actually pushed Performance Matters to provide us with some new tools that some competitors provide, and they have responded. In fact, Unify is one of their aspects, another tool that they have provided with us as a result of pushing them a little bit. The goal three measurable outcomes didn't change. It's hard data, usage of numbers, and surveys about focus. So those are analytics that we can use to measure the effectiveness of technology as a student management system. So those are the goals as I have created them for 16-17.
I'd like to open up to the board discussion. First, I want to ask the attorney to refresh also my memory. We will adopt, once we've discussed and vetted these goals, at a future board meeting to adopt the superintendent's goals and objectives. Is that correct?
Yes. You may remember you amended the superintendent's employment agreement about a year ago, and the deadline to do that is the first available school board meeting in August of each year. So it would be that first meeting in August the 9th this year, regular board meeting.
Thanks. So this would, after today's discussion, we'll put this on the agenda for the 9th. Any questions or Mr. Sissy?
Related to that goal of free increase in technology and student management system, this focus thing that you're talking about, is that the one where they do the grade books and all? And one of the number of complaints about the ability to use that thing on the computer because it was so long and you couldn't, it was impossible to use. And my thought that probably I had asked to see a demonstration of it in here, and
Right. You've
never seen that.
You're correct. You asked for that, and we did not deliver that. So I'll make sure we deliver that as soon as possible. The focus system, there are many aspects to it. It's the grade management system, as well as a lesson plan design system, as well as a student record system, and it's kind of like an all-in-one system. So some of the components we built as we used them this year, like the elementary report card, was something we built as we went along this year, and there were a lot of growing pains associated with building the elementary report card. So I'm sure Ms. Cannon would agree. But one of the things that's been really good about how Mr. Green's departments work is that they involve the front-end user whenever they're trying to make adjustments or corrections to the program. So I know that Mr. Powers invited a lot of teacher input as we were working through the kinks in that elementary report card.
So it's becoming more teacher-friendly.
Yes, sir. Well,
yes, they are working with us to try and make it more usable. Elementary teachers are going to be required to fill in that last year they had like a short period of time where they can enter their grades instead of now they can enter them throughout the marking period. They are streamlining and they are listening to our suggestions. So it is getting better. It's not perfect yet, but it's getting
better. Okay. Ms. Jimenez?
I'm looking at your measurable outcomes for focus area one with relative to student achievement. You address the graduation rate. You address a goal of 5% increase in third grade reading based on state data and based on the SAT 10. Is there any possibility of doing the same in whatever measure is adequate for math? Because math has been such a sore point for the school district, and I think it would be helpful to keep that at the forefront also.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to that. It would be covered under the second bullet of Goal 1's measurable outcomes, but I can flesh it out and make it more prominent.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
Any further?
No. Dr. Rendell, maybe I'm misremembering here, but we discussed at one point moving to a district strategic plan that
Correct.
Would then align to your goals.
Correct.
Is that just a time thing?
It's a perfect segue. So one of the other community initiatives that we want to launch probably middle of the year, towards the second half of the year, is to engage the board and the community in developing a five-year strategic plan. The idea would be if we can develop a five-year strategic plan to be launched in the 17-18 school year, then actually I wouldn't have superintendent's goals anymore. I would be measured on our progress towards the five-year strategic plan goals. But the idea would be that at probably the midpoint of this year, because we're going to be doing some other things in the first part of the year, we engage in that process of building a five-year strategic plan as a district.
Mr. Stacey?
Strategic plan, sorry.
Ms. Roy.
I guess under goal to where it says increase the number of students reading at grade level by 5%. We talked, I spoke to you about subgroups because when you get to sixth grade, that often camouflages a number of issues.
Yep. Yeah, we actually have a data sheet that corresponds to all these measurable outcomes, and it is broken down by subgroup. But I'll flesh it out in the language that's used here.
And that
isn't that actually in the second bullet point of goal three? Increase minority subgroup.
Oh, that's graduation. Yeah, that's graduation rate. Yeah. But I can flesh it out in the text.
Ms. Soar.
Yep.
I have a question on the graduation rates this year. Are they out yet?
So it's a good question. If you remember way back in like January or February, we got the graduation rates for last school year. And at first we were at 76% or whatever. And we noticed that they hadn't made some of the corrections that we had sent to them back in December. And when we got the recalculated, accurate graduation rate was 82%. So you typically don't get your graduation rate until November, December. So we won't get this year's graduation rate until November or December. For 14-15, yes, 82%.
So
it takes so long to get that.
So what the state does is it tries to match the students where they started in ninth grade and where they finished in 12th grade. Well, where they finished in 4 years, did they graduate from a public high school in the state of Florida? So there's a lot of data analysis. The state tracks every student. Every student has a student number now, so they can track once they enter a Florida public school, they can track them as long as they're in a Florida public school. So it takes them a few months to try to match students from the end of 12th grade year. We send them a data sheet, you know, these are our seniors that graduated. And then they have to then match that up with all those students that were in our system in ninth grade and did they go anywhere and the ones that came. It's just matching students from wherever they came from. So we have students who graduate with us as seniors that didn't start with us as ninth graders. So it takes the state that much time to track down who's where. Mm-hmm. Where did that? Because we might have a student who graduates with us, so on that graduating roster, who started 5 years ago, maybe not even with us. Maybe he was in ninth grade in another county and was retained and moved here in ninth grade. So it takes the state that long to verify where all these students have been.
As smart as Mr. Green is, could he figure out a way to give us the local?
So I have asked Mr. Green, is there any way he can calculate an estimate?
Yeah, that's
right. He's working on that.
Okay.
At first he told me he didn't think he could do that, but one of our neighboring districts does it. It's not official. It's not released, hey, here's our graduation rate, but they feel pretty confident in their method of calculation.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been talking with them as finding out how they do it. So we're trying to come up with a way. What's interesting for everybody to note, for the public to note, is the graduation rate is part of the grading component for every one of the high schools. So for both of our comprehensive high schools and for the charter high school, graduation rate is one of their components. So in the past, high schools didn't get their school grades until November or December. until graduation rate was calculated, until the percent of students who participate in advanced coursework is calculated, and all that kind of thing. Because the state wants to issue everyone grades over the summer, they've decided to do a lag measure for the graduation rate. So Vero Beach High School, Sebastian River High School, and Indian River Charter High, graduation rates that were used in the calculation for their school grades for this year were last year's graduation rates. And so it's a lag year component. And so next year's school grade for those high schools will incorporate this year's school grade when they do the calculation. It's just, in some ways, it could be a help for a high school, or it could be a penalty. It depends. But that's just something that's a little known fact about the grading, you know, another change to the grading formula for this year.
You have a follow-up, Ms. Moore?
Thank you for clarifying that. I have met with Mr. Green. I would like to have know if our students aren't graduating, how many are actually going into fifth year and graduating. And I know the state's not requiring us to calculate that at the moment, but that would be interesting, you know, for us to know. No, we're not all graduating, you know, our fourth year, but how many are actually going on to graduate fifth year?
Or wouldn't that be testing with GED as well? Would that?
I think GED is tracked.
But a GED doesn't count as a graduate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we used to track the five-year graduation rate because that was actually the graduation rate that was used. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have to see. Yeah, I'm sure it's a matter of figuring out how to track it, but I'm sure we can do it.
So I think that leads into the segue that you had said about this tool. Maybe if we go to a strategic plan thrown out, you'd be graded on something else,
right?
Which is my last item that I wanted to speak to, because we will have the landscape of the board change, and the board chairman tabulates the. It's part of Dr. Rendell's contract, as well as a tool, I think, for anyone to have to be critiqued. I think is important. If you could look at the attached to your the agenda on the first page over here, it says evaluation of the superintendent. The last paragraph: the annual evaluation will link the superintendent's performance to the district goals. Well, what was problematic for me? So I'm looking for just a tool to improve for the next person, let's say, or next year. So we had our forms that went through like professional standards, A through E. First of all, if you turn to the evaluation tool that we all used, I just wanted to clarify, and Judy can modify these things, on the rating legend, it would be very clear if we put commendable equals 4, 3, 2, 1. Spell that out, because some people did 1, 2, 3, 4, and I knew what they meant. So for tabulations, I put us all at the same standard, whatever they were. But that was fine. The second thing, as it said to, some people were specific, some people linked or didn't linked or kind of linked. What I would like to propose is, we have these, if you look at the professional standards, it would say integrity and leadership, and that was A. Then B was communication and community engagement. C, effective board relations, and either people could put comments or no comments, that was their choice, but they could, but importantly, they would put a rating. What I'm proposing is, which was some confusion, is we went up to E, which is A, B, C, D, E, five areas of rating. I would like to add 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and so it would be A, B, C, D, E. F would be goals and objectives, focus area of goals and objectives, student achievement, with those three bullet points, and then an area to rate. So that we would use 10 points instead of 5 for a rating. Instead of telling the board you should link it, and some did and some didn't, because we went from a different superintendent and different goals, it just was some, or one page that has the goals and to put a rating system. Because some people linked it and some people didn't. And the instructions, and this is the problem for the chair. We pass these at our secretary. Judy passes them out. And we cannot, it was like closing the barn door after the horse got out. I can't have a conversation with, what did you mean? So this is the time for the goals and objectives. This is certainly the time for me to point out for, like I said, maybe the next person, that the document in which we rate, I don't see that, and it'll take input. Do we throw out the standards and just go strictly by goals, but then a year from now the goals are going to change? Or do we keep the standards you rate and add a sixth page that just lists the goals and you rate? Like I said, goal one, the student achievement, would serve as F. I'd like some input because, someone else might be doing this and I would not want somebody to get into that seat and have a bit of puzzlement. And, you take it seriously and you want to make sure you're looking at everybody fairly. Comments are a choice, and it's always been, but the actual rating system, do we want to add the five bullet points of the goals? Or just, Mr. Frost?
Sure, I think that's reasonable. Because, candidly, I'm not interested in intentions, I'm interested in outcomes. So I'm all about, some of those are intangibles, leadership, and you just know how we survive emergencies or things like that. Dr. Randall had an opportunity to demonstrate that in earnest this last year. I will point out that it's interesting, we, as school board members often get upset when the state changes the assessment, and we have to adapt. But I think in this case, the more granularity and the fact that I can't change the past, but to my mind, having it tied to the strategy and outcomes, desired outcomes of the district, is the only reasonable choice. So I'm very comfortable adding the five.
And the reason I bring this up is because, of course, we want an effective leader and somebody with integrity. But I only had five categories, and they were standards. Because technically, if someone left out a goal, whether it's Dr. Rendell or anyone, and that's a perception. I think that goals are important, and I think, like you said, it should at least warrant the same amount of critique than just a professional standard of, do they show up? Do they interact with the community? Do they do this? And then there was no tool really to grade that. I think he'd rather hear our reflectiveness on those than the other things. So
yeah, and I think if you look at the way we have the professional standards, student achievement is not even really directly addressed, and so that is a big flaw right there in the tool. So I do think that for future board members, it will help in the process of looking at those goals and holding the superintendent accountable for those specific goals. And the professional standards, of course, are important. They should just be a part of the overall. And you might consider, here you have your major points, and these could just be additional points.
I hear you. I was going to, prior to this conversation, say that should be on comments, and we should really be looking at this. But then there is a chance that we're going to be even changing this document. So next year it would be another. So I thought the simplest way would be to add 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 with these five goals. Leave this, and then when we actually change our
strategic
planning, each year, but it's something that we do. Mr. Searcy, did you want to weigh in on that? Would you be acceptable to adding the five? Oh, good. So that's really my. I think it's just from somebody who was sitting in the driver's seat this year. It was, first of all, thank you all again for your hard work in using the tool and I think that people improve from, not everybody, nobody likes critiques, but I think they're effective. And so thank you. And I just think that the easiest way would be to add those five goals and then if somebody wants to comment, they can add an extra page if they want to really be commenting, or as ample space, or I've seen great job, and then a rating. So that's going to be up to the individual rater, but that's what I would like to have Judy change the tool. So if you don't mind, if we have consensus, our tool change to make sure it shows 4, 3, 2, 1, Judy, at the highest being 4 down to 1. And if we add the E, F, G, H, I, or, you know, the 5 extra goals with just that, and a space, you know, make it conform to this form to look the same as the additional pages so that we are covering all misdiagrams.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The only other question that you had raised with me as you were working your way through this process was the provision in the employment agreement that referenced overall performance rating of satisfactory or greater. And we looked at the rating, and it seems like the terminology
has changed. So let me just tell you my little quandary I had. The contract said
satisfactory
or above satisfactory, and we're having commendable and things like that. I did take a little liberty to think that if it was commendable, it was above satisfactory, and if it was meet expectations, it was satisfactory. But I think those two items, commendable should be expectations, but if we could change meets expectations to satisfactory.
Proficient?
Or just reference in your definition that meets expectations relates back to the satisfactory or greater phrase in the employment agreement, just so that we know where that line is so we don't have a misunderstanding.
So the meet expectations is acknowledges the superintendent has met with satisfactory performance. Okay. Thank you for indulging me. That was a little bit of a, you know, and I just want the next person, you know, if there is one, to have a little easier time at it. And is there any further items on your mind, board, before we, because we have another full schedule at 5 and 6. So with that, then thank you, Dr. Dell, for your work. We'll see this on the next agenda, and thank you, people, for coming. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you. Judy, how would I turn this off?
Phraseology and sometimes
thank you.